makes a move of which we don't approve. Who is it that always intervenes? UN and OAS, they have their place, I guess. But first, send the Marines. We'll send them all we've got. John Wayne and Randolph Scott. Remember those exciting fighting scenes. To the shores of Tripoli, but not to Mississippi. What do? We send the Marines. For might makes right. Until they've seen the light, they've got to be protected. All their rights respected. Till somebody we like can be elected. Members of the Corps all hate the thought of war. They'd rather kill them off by peaceful means. Stop calling it aggression. Ooh, we hate that expression. We only want the world to know that we support the status quo. They love us everywhere we go. So when in doubt, send the Marines.
John Kerry for America and for the red, white, and blue. We need a man who stands for all of the people, not just the privileged few.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Senator John Kerry and rocker Bruce Springsteen told more than 80,000 people at their rally near Wisconsin's state capital that working America is suffering under George W. Bush.
People have run out of their unemployment benefits. He says, no, we're not going to extend them. People are working for overtime, trying to get ahead. He says, no, we're going to cut overtime. Veterans are trying to get into VA. He says, no, we're not going to provide the money that the VA director wants. But he fights like hell to get that tax cut for the wealthiest people in America. We need a president who's not fighting for the drug companies and the oil companies and the power companies. We need a president who's fighting for you, for the middle class, for America.
Springsteen says he supports Kerry to uphold these values, among others.
The human principles of economic justice, healing the sick, health care, feeding the hungry, housing the homeless, a living wage so folks don't have to break their backs and still not make ends meet.
Kerry says when he wins November 2nd, he'll attack the problem of exporting of American jobs.
When I'm president, we're going to shut the loophole that rewards the company that take jobs overseas, and we're going to reward the companies that create jobs and keep them here in the United States.
Kerry vows never to privatize Social Security and to lower the cost of health care for workers.
The world's second largest tech service provider offshored more than 20,000 jobs to places like Mexico, India, and Hungary by the end of 2003. So it comes as no surprise to critics of offshoring that Electronic Data Services announced early this week that it's offering an early retirement plan to over 9,000 U.S. workers. More than 17,000 of the jobs offshored by EDS were in the customer service field. However, at the end of last year, the company sent nearly 2,400 jobs for software developers and engineers abroad. In its announcement, EDS says that the early retirements are part of a larger plan to reduce its U.S. workforce by up to 20,000 employees. Students in Peoria, Illinois are getting a first-hand lesson in organized labor. 125 clerical staff members formed picket lines outside of Peoria Public Schools yesterday. According to a representative for the Peoria Federation of Support Staff, the strike began because the school district has not negotiated in good faith. Here is today's Dow Bob Report. Hey management, skimping to save a couple bucks on heating costs in the workplace could be causing your workers to make more errors. A new report from Cornell University reveals that when office temperature in a month-long study increased from 68 to 77 degrees, typing errors fell by 44% and output jumped by 150%. The study also finds that raising the temperature to a comfortable level saves an employer on average $2 per worker per hour. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We were given these ideas that there's weapons of mass destruction, but where are the weapons of mass destruction? They said they were so sure where they were, but where are they? When we were over there, we looked around. I was on an intelligence gathering team. We looked in scientific installations. We never found anything. And it was just a lie. And that wasn't a proper use of American troops. That wasn't a proper use of my life, or my friends' lives, or the Marines who I've seen die around me. It's not a proper use.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Great news, shouts George W. on the campaign trail. 95,000 new jobs were created in September. This is proof, he exclaims, that his trickle-down economic policies are working. How rosy. How wrong. First, 95,000 new jobs is a pathetically weak number in an economy that boasts such enormous new wealth creation as ours. It takes nearly twice that merely to match the number of new workers coming into our nation's job market each month. Meanwhile, there's the growing job backlog, the millions of Americans who are either unemployed or underemployed, wanting full-time jobs but only able to get part-time or temporary work. How bad is Bush's job record? Herbert Hoover bad. George will be the first president since Hoover, way back in the Depression economy of 1932, to have produced a net loss of jobs on his watch. Wait, cries Bush, look at the September unemployment rate, only 5.4%. Another rosy number, but another deceit. The only reason it didn't go up is that 200,000 more Americans have become so discouraged in their job searches that they have given up looking for work in September. If you've quit looking for a job, the system no longer counts you as unemployed, even though, of course, you are. But there's another job statistic that George doesn't want you and me to focus on. Wages. The real issue is not the number of jobs, but the pay of those jobs. Wages determine whether ours will remain a middle-class country. And the news here is not good. Hourly wage gains under Bush have fallen beneath the rate of inflation, meaning America's middle class is falling down. Indeed, in September, there was a loss of another 18,000 well-paying manufacturing jobs, while low-paying service jobs were up by 100,000. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's the American dream that they're destroying.
If you have joint pain and you're concerned you may be taking too many over-the-counter pills, here's a simple way to find out. Just read the labels. This one says, for the temporary relief of minor aches and pains. What else? Not to exceed 8 tablets in 24 hours. And right here it says, do not take this product for pain for more than 10 days unless directed by a doctor. It is small type, but it's there for a reason. If your pain lasts more than 10 days, talk to a doctor, because the risks are real. Ulcers, kidney problems, liver problems, and far worse. So no matter what medication you take for joint pain, over-the-counter or prescription, make sure you're taking it the right way. Read the labels. If your joint pain lasts more than 10 days, talk to your doctor. To find out more about Safe Arthritis Joint Pain Relief or to get your free information kit, visit safepainrelief.com. Know the risks. Get the facts. This message brought to you by Pfizer.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at White Rose Society and at tomhartman.com. You can drop into our live chat room. Go to tomhartman.com and click live chat. It'll drop you over to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, where we have regular chat. And in our first hour, it's Friday. It's Friday afternoon. First of all, welcome to our C-SPAN viewers. Our C-SPAN viewers are also getting a little extra during the time that we go to commercial break here. We're going to be talking also specifically with them. But welcome to our C-SPAN listeners. But it's the first hour of Friday. And every Friday, the first hour of our program, we bring on Congressman Bernie Sanders. I think of Bernie as, or Congressman Sanders, I think of him as America's congressman. He was first elected to the United States Congress in 1991. He was the first independent to be elected to Congress in over 40 years. He's been reelected, what, 6 times now?
Yep.
And one of the tireless advocates for the real issues, not this, you know, gun gods and gays and strange, but the real issues, the real core visceral issues that, in my opinion, affect America. Bernie, so good to have you here.
Good to be with you, Tom.
It's great to have you here in the studio today. Let's start out here. One of the things that I've observed here in Vermont is you drive around in some of these rural neighborhoods and you see people who you know are making, you know, $6,000-$10,000 a year, living in a trailer or something. There's a Bush sign out in front of their house.
Yep.
How you and I know that, that the Bush administration is working aggressively against the economic interests of low and middle income people. How is this happening?
Well, Tom, I think you raised one of the most important and interesting developments in this whole campaign. And that is that the Bush people and the right-wing Republican leadership have been very successful in deflecting attention away from the most important issues facing our country, especially with regard to low and moderate income people, into what we call the wedge issues.
Yeah.
So what you're seeing is somebody who works in a factory whose job has gone to China, has seen a substantial reduction in his or her wages, and they're saying, man, I'm going to vote for Bush, who is in favor of outsourcing, in favor of seeing their job go to China. I'm going to vote for Bush because he's for a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage.
Yeah, like that's going to really change their life.
You're seeing people, and we have millions of Americans who are working at the pathetic minimum wage of $5.15 an hour, and you're going to have some of those folks voting for George Bush, although he doesn't want to raise the minimum wage because of his position on abortion.
Yeah. Well, not only that, I've said over and over again, I think you can boil the entire conservative economic agenda down to two words, cheap labor.
That's right. Cheap labor and defense of the largest corporations in this country and the wealthiest people. And I think that what we have got to do as a nation, and I know we're in the last days of a very intense campaign and all kinds of ads are going on the air, but I think we've got to calm down a little bit and just ask ourselves some very basic questions. And one of the questions, you know, that we want to ask, it's what Ronald Reagan asked in 1980.
Are you better today than you were, better off today than you were 4 years ago?
Very simple question.
Yeah,
and the
simple
answer to that is, for some people, for all of you out there who are millionaires and billionaires, if you're not concerned about the future of this country, you're not worried about your kids and your grandchildren, for your own economic reasons, I can understand that you're voting for George Bush. That is a rational decision. I think a bad one, but a rational decision. But if you are an ordinary working person, you have a president of the United States who has changed federal labor standards, the Federal Labor Standards Act, to throw 6 million workers off of overtime. That's you, friend, and you're going to vote for George Bush. In the last 4 years alone, there are 5 million more people who have lost their health insurance. The health care system in America is disintegrating, and you're going to vote for George Bush because he's supporting a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage? Give me a break. I think what people have got to do is just take a deep breath, look at what's going on in their own lives, the lives of their friends and families and community. And any objective assessment of what is going on in this country today in terms of our economy, in terms of health care, in terms of the environment, in terms of foreign policy, suggests that this president, in almost every respect, has been a disaster.
Yeah.
So what I am urging, Tom, is people to stand up and vote for their own interest. Corporate America and millionaires and billionaires are voting for their interest. The time is long overdue for the middle class and working families to vote for their interest. If they do that, Kerry wins in a landslide.
Yeah, and we can track this back. You can see that, you know, when Reagan declared war on PATCO, when Reagan came in and declared war on the middle class, it was the continuation of, in 1946, the Republicans got control of the House and Senate, and they passed the Taft-Hartley Act, trying to cut back on the power of the Wagner Act, which had been passed in 1935, which gave, for the first time in the history of the United States, really, the legal right for unionization, an unassailable legal right for unionization. Taft-Hartley cut that back. A number of southern states picked up on it, and we have seen ever since then the steady evisceration of the middle class, and George Bush has been just double-speeding it. We've got a bunch of calls here, Bernie.
I've held many, many meetings here in the state of Vermont, political meetings, and every single meeting, somebody gets up and expresses outrage about this whole outsourcing business.
Yeah.
You have these president and all of his corporate friends. They love America. They are ever so patriotic, and they're so patriotic that they're busy sending our jobs to China where desperate people are paid 30 cents an hour. So, again, I think what the issue is you have got to determine, we have got to determine, are we better off than we were 4 years ago? People have differences with Kerry. People are not enthusiastic about Kerry. Fair enough. I have differences with Kerry, but I think the choice is very clear, and I hope the president, you know, has indicated that being president is a hard job.
Yeah.
He said that many times, and it's true.
It's a very hard
I think he needs a vacation. I think we should send him back to Crawford,
there
Texas.
There you go. Well said. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to call and be on the program. 1-866-889-8894. Our first call is from Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Welcome to the program, Glenn.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie. Hi. I've been watching all the talking heads on TV, and an interesting thing keeps cropping up. One is that if you poll Americans, there are all these statistics where 80% of Americans support universal health care, and yet, you know, it's not happening, and I think it's that disconnect between the people in Washington. I'm just wondering, what, Bernie, do you think has to happen before... Is it a popular vote instead of electoral college? Is it getting the money out of politics somehow and having government finance campaigns? What's going to have to happen before the government becomes more responsive to what people really want?
Boy, Glenn, you asked the $64 question, and thanks for that question. The truth of the matter is, if you look at Bush's ideology, and the legislation that the right wing of the Republican Party has brought forth, they are literally a fringe group.
Yeah.
You go out to your community and you say to people, how many of you are in favor of hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires, which raises the national debt that we leave to our kids, and at the same time, as Bush did, we're going to throw 160,000 veterans off of VA health care and impose new fees and costs on our veterans? Raise your hand if you think that's a good idea.
Yeah, it was $135 billion just a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
$135 billion to corporations. And they said, we're going to do this so that we can have jobs. And the next day, on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, is the article where they're saying, now... After the legislation has been passed, the corporations are saying, we're going to bring that money back to the United States to give to our shareholders. We're going to use it to increase dividends. So those people who earn their living sitting on their butt by the pool paying only 15% income tax because the last Bush tax cut reduced the level of income tax on people who make their living from dividends rather than from labor, those people are going to get a huge increase in income. But none of these companies were saying, we're going to increase jobs.
But if you go down the list, and Glenn hit it right on that, how many Americans believe that the United States should join the rest of the industrialized world and guarantee health care to all people?
I think most Americans do.
Most Americans do. How many people think it's a great idea that corporations throw American workers out on the street, go to China, hire desperate people, 30 cents an hour, bring the product back into this country tariff-free? Not too many. Yeah. But the point is, and Glenn raised, what is going on? And I think the issue is a couple of fold. Frankly, a political consciousness in this country is quite low. I think the corporate media does an abysmal job of discussing the reality of American life.
Now, if we can pause you there, the corporate media is, this is from Sinclair recently, what they've done, and this whole discussion. On the one hand, you've got people, and this is the problem I have with people who call up and they just want to vilify, for example, Sinclair or Clear Channel or even for Walmart. If a corporation is breaking the law, certainly they should be prosecuted. But in most cases, these companies are playing by the rules. The problem is that we have set the rules up wrong. I mean, there was a time in this country when the rules worked, when we actually, when there were news departments that actually delivered news rather than infotainment, when there was a sense of commitment to journalistic standards, when ratings weren't the key to the whole thing. How do we get back to that, in Bernie? And what are you seeing in Congress? What's the sense of this?
Well, let me give you the bad news, and let me give you the good news.
Okay.
The bad news is that in recent years, we have seen fewer and fewer large media conglomerates own and control what we see, hear, and read.
Yeah.
The bad news is that Bush's FCC under Michael Powell wants to deregulate further, which means that you're going to have in communities all over this country one large corporation owning the TV station, the radio stations, and the newspaper. An absolute insult to democracy. That's the bad news. Yeah. The good news is that more and more people are catching on to this reality. And as you remember, we have been able to stop this deregulation effort at the FCC. A court in Pennsylvania, federal court, put a stay on it. Millions of people are now involved in the process. So to answer Glenn's question again, there are a lot of things that we have to do. Bottom line is we have got to develop a strong grassroots democracy. We have got to demand that media allows all points of view to be heard. We have got to understand that no elected official or public official can tell you anything in a 3-second soundbite. And, Tom, one of the reasons why I like going on your show is that you are one of the few voices, and we need more and more of them to present the American people with an alternative point of view. We are a nation, as everybody knows, divided politically. God only knows who's going to win this election. It's going to be close. I want to know why on commercial radio, almost every talk show is dominated by extreme right-wingers, why there are only a handful of progressive voices like you. But the American people have got to get involved in that process, and they've got to demand more opportunities for people like Tom and other people who have different points of view than Rush Limbaugh does.
Well, I think, Bernie, I don't carry the conspiracy view of that. I really think that they're, having been in radio since the late 60s, that there's a herd mentality among programmers. And Limbaugh came out and he did well, and they said, gee, talk radio works, and they thought the conservative was the same as talk. And now they're starting to see, I mean, with the ratings of my program, the ratings of the Air America programs, programmers across the United States are realizing there's half of America that hasn't been talked to for 15 years now.
Right.
And they're saying, hey, you know, maybe we should develop some programming to talk to these folks. Maybe we should be reaching out to them. And it's working. And so I think the market is actually going to be a solution to this problem. We're going to take a break here. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news. Broadcasting live from behind the good old working-class stainless steel microphone here in the People's Republic of Vermont. We're here with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Our number 1-866-889-8894. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy. Again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation, free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Looking down the nose is what people say. These is words and words will be. It's what you do.
And welcome back. 24 minutes after the hour. Tom Hartman here with you with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Friday afternoon, our regular first hour of the program, Friday afternoon brunch with Bernie segment. Our telephone number 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to participate in the program. Let's go to some phone calls here, Bernie. Let's go to Dennis in New York. Dennis, you're live and on the air with Congressman Sanders and Tom Hartman.
Good afternoon, Congressman Sanders. I've been watching C-SPAN for 25 years, since 1979.
The C-SPAN guys here are smiling. That's great.
They're pleased.
I have an action plan to force the Congress to repeal that meager prescription drug benefit and replace it with an 80% coverage in Medicare Part B with no extra premium or deductible. I tell people to write down this number, 3833-66962. That's 3833-66962, and enter it into Google and search for it, and it'll bring up the link for my petition that they can read.
Dennis, this is great. I don't want to be doing spots for people's gigs on the air. Do you have a specific question for Congressman Sanders or an issue that
Dennis raises an important issue.
Well, okay. This is boycott activism.
Okay.
This is boycott activism.
Okay.
Using the power of thousands of people to cut off the money that companies funnel to the Republican Party and you take control of it.
Yeah, but
I also have a boycott of Walmart to force them to increase the minimum wage to $10 an hour and to extend unemployment benefits for those people who lost their benefits after 6 months.
Yeah. Dennis is raising one of the great fallacies, I think, and that is that if we simply vote with our dollars, then that's the boycott solution. If we have it's not democracy. Your dollars, the people with the most dollars have the most votes.
Well, and Dennis
we need to change the rules.
All right, but I think Dennis raises a couple of important issues. Let me touch on one of them. What Dennis is pointing out in terms of this disastrous Bush prescription drug Medicare plan, he's pointing out that it is a fraudulent plan, essentially written by the pharmaceutical industry. And I want to get back again to those people out there who are not totally crazy about John Kerry. They're thinking of voting for George Bush. I want you to think about what sense it is that we have a president of the United States who works day and night for the pharmaceutical industry to make sure that they continue to be the most profitable industry in America, and at the same time pushes through legislation which prevents the United States government from negotiating to lower prescription drug prices in our country, which are by far the highest in the world.
Yeah.
That bill is a disaster. It was passed in an undemocratic way, and Dennis is quite right. We've got to junk that bill and move to the bill which has 80% coverage from Medicare and 20% from the consumer. And we can do that. We can do that.
And the way to do it is through the political process. Is to absolutely be holding to the fire, holding their feet to the fire, our elected officials, like you. You know, our elected officials.
Well, I'm a nice guy. It's the other guys.
and that's the thing. Get out there, get active, and start voting. We got about a minute and a half here. Let's take another call. 1-866-889-8894. And this is Rooster in Pleasant View, Utah.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, welcome. You're live.
Thank you.
And Congressman Sanders, it's an honor to speak with you, sir.
Thank you.
I'm one of the many Vietnam vets who came home asking exactly why we'd been sent to do the things we'd been sent over there for. And I kind of got activated, started reading a little more what was going on in the circles of power. And it seems to me when you look at the people who have the control of the money, you get to the root of the problem. What I found is some folks like Tom and Holly Squar who were sifting through the journal articles written by people like Zbigniew Brzezinski and other of the conservative think tanks who were laying out a prescription for control of the United States of America.
Yeah, Rooster, we're gonna have to get a response from Congressman Sanders on that after the break here. But you raise a good point. I mean, the power of money in America and the power of money even.
Rooster, that is the issue, and that's the issue that Congress and the media should be talking about.
There you go. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Talk about unsanitary. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums or wear a dust mask. Imagine vacuuming your house wearing a dust mask? Friends, try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL free for 30 days. It's 99.99% dust-free. Call 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Senator John Kerry and rocker Bruce Springsteen told more than 80,000 people at their rally near Wisconsin's state capitol that working America is suffering under George W. Bush.
People have run out of their unemployment benefits. He says, no, we're not going to extend them. People are working for overtime, trying to get ahead. He says, no, we're going to cut overtime. Veterans are trying to get into VA. He says, no, we're not going to provide the money that the VA director wants. But he fights like hell to get that tax cut for the wealthiest people in America. We need a president who's not fighting for the drug companies and the oil companies and the power companies. We need a president who's fighting for you, for the middle class, for America.
Springsteen says he supports Kerry to uphold these values among others.
The human principles of economic justice, healing the sick, health care, feeding the hungry, housing the homeless, a living wage so folks don't have to break their backs and still not make ends meet.
Kerry says when he wins November 2nd, he'll attack the problem of exporting of American jobs.
When I'm president, we're going to shut the loophole that rewards the company that take jobs overseas, and we're going to reward the companies that create jobs and keep them here in the United States.
Kerry vows never to privatize Social Security and to lower the cost of health care for workers.
The world's second largest tech service provider offshored more than 20,000 jobs to places like Mexico, India, and Hungary by the end of 2003. So it comes as no surprise to critics of offshoring that Electronic Data Services announced early this week that it's offering an early retirement plan to over 9,000 U.S. workers. More than 17,000 of the jobs offshored by EDS were in the customer service field. However, at the end of last year, the company sent nearly 2,400 jobs for software developers and engineers abroad. In its announcement, EDS says that the early retirements are part of a larger plan to reduce its U.S. workforce by up to 20,000 employees. Students in Peoria, Illinois are getting a first-hand lesson in organized labor. 125 clerical staff members formed picket lines outside of Peoria Public Schools yesterday. According to a representative for the Peoria Federation of Support Staff, the strike began because the school district has not negotiated in good faith. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey management, skimping to save a couple bucks on heating costs in the workplace could be causing your workers to make more errors. A new report from Cornell University reveals that when office temperature in a month-long study increased from 68 to 77 degrees, typing errors fell by 44% and output jumped by 150%. The study also finds that raising the temperature to a comfortable level saves an employer on average $2 per worker per hour. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. It's our regular Friday afternoon segment. Really the one time out of the entire week when I actually have a guest on for the whole hour. Congressman Bernie Sanders. He's such a brilliant guy. He's America's congressman, in my opinion. And Bernie, before we go to the phones, Rooster from Pleasant View, Utah. Had raised this issue of the influence of money in politics. And we were talking about this for our C-SPAN listeners, but let's just wrap this up here.
Well, what Rooster said is the obvious fundamental truth of American politics. And we know that it's true because the corporate media and members of Congress hardly talk about it at all. What I could do for you is trace the legislation that comes onto the floor of the House and tell you who paid for that legislation.
Yeah.
And it is an outrage. It is undermining American democracy, and that's the issue we need to discuss and we need to change if we're going to create the kind of vibrant democracy that the American people deserve.
Yeah, and there have been a lot of well-intentioned efforts, including McCain-Feingold.
Yes.
But
we're going to have to go a lot further than that.
Somehow they keep blowing up in our faces, but we need to work on these things. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's go to John in Illinois. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to qualify something that you said, which is that the corporations are following the rules. The problem that I have with that is that they're the ones setting the rules.
Well, that's the point. That's the point. I mean, absolutely. This is the chicken and egg problem, that you have corporations setting the rules and then following the rules, and that's you're right.
And so something that's occurred to me over the last several years is that we allow our leadership to do things that our children, we don't allow our children to do. You know, when we were kids, somebody said, hey, it's my game, I get to set the rules. We went home. We didn't play that game.
Yeah.
But over and over and over, we allow it in the government. A suggestion that I have just came to mind, and I don't know if I'm changing the subject too much, but a suggestion that I have as far as jobs going overseas is to put a minimum wage in, a requirement that anything sold in our markets be made with a minimum wage.
Right. Yeah. Right. You mean the U.S. minimum wage or the Chinese? I mean,
I would set it on like a gross national product.
Right.
So that as their gross national product goes up, so does their minimum wage.
Well, John, when you hear people talking about fair trade and establishing international labor standards or respecting those standards on our trade policies, that is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I just met, Tom, last week we had three women from Bangladesh who were here who make pants that go into Walmarts. They make 13 cents an hour, and when they don't meet the quota, they are beaten.
Yeah.
And that's the product that we're buying, and that's so-called unfettered free trade. And that's why Americans are losing their
jobs. This is where I think maybe you and I disagree, even, Bernie. I think that putting in the environmental protections and minimum wage standards for other countries as a way of solving our trade problem is only halfway. I believe we should say if there's a dollar's worth of labor in a pair of tennis shoes made in the United States, and that same pair of tennis shoes made in Malaysia has 10 cents worth of labor, then if they want to import those, that's fine. You can make them in Malaysia. But if you want to import them into the United States, you have to pay a 90-cent tariff so that labor cost is still a dollar.
There's truth in both, and I think maybe we want to combine both approaches.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, in terms of this whole issue of globalization, two things are happening. Number one, American workers are being thrown out on the street, wages are going down, and our people are being asked to compete against desperate people.
Yeah.
Not our enemies, but desperate people in China, in Bangladesh, and elsewhere. Our job as a civilized society is to do as you say. Number one, we've got to protect the middle class and decent-paying jobs.
Well, we have to do that to have a democracy.
Exactly.
You can't have a functioning democracy without a functioning middle class.
Absolutely.
And, it's just,
and we're in the danger of losing that, friends.
Yes.
And the second thing we have to do is, with the rest of the industrialized world, is make policy. I don't want to see people in Bangladesh make 13 cents an hour. I want to see the poor people of this world get uplifted. I don't want to see American workers go down.
But wouldn't it be great if they were doing that in a way that was enhancing their own internal economy?
Absolutely.
Rather than simply making goods for
absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely.
Let's encourage them to develop their own internal self-sufficient economy, and let's go back to self-sufficiency.
And there's more and more understanding of that, just that point, all yeah. over in Latin America. They're electing yeah. leadership there who are saying, wait a second, we don't like this neoliberalism. Yeah. We don't like the IMF and the World Bank and what they're doing to us. Yeah. So your point is well taken.
Yeah, I think a lot of economists are starting to wake up to this. Let's go back to the phone. Calvin in North Carolina is on the line. Hey, Calvin. Welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
Good.
What's up?
Congressman Sanders, I'm a disabled veteran, and I wanted to know, how is it that the, you know, how this president can send young kids fresh out of high school over into war, and then, you know, the, some of them get injured and come home and not able to work. And, you know, trying to get veteran benefits is almost like trying to pull a wisdom tooth out. I'm just trying to get some understanding on how is the veterans' benefits so hard to get, especially yeah. for the ones that's been over there and volunteered their service.
Calvin,
and I got to add to that, Bernie, also, just to set this up, you know, my father came back from World War II from the occupation of Japan, and there were, you know, veterans benefits that were quite healthy, and I think those also helped build the middle class.
Calvin touched on an issue that I feel passionately about, because I get sick and tired of seeing this president of the United States with the troops, his photo opportunities with the troops, the yep. big flag behind him.
Well, now they're even airbrushing them in, actually.
That's another and yet thing. He has turned his back on the veterans of America. Let me just read you a quote, Calvin. This came from the fellow who was recently head of the VFW. He said, and I quote, February 2nd, the president ignored veterans in the State of the Union address, and with today's release of his 2005 budget, it is further evident that veterans are no longer a priority with this administration. People don't fully understand it, but this guy who, quote unquote, loves the troops threw 160,000 veterans, Level 8 veterans, off of VA health care last year. We have people, Tom, who are calling my office, who are 80 years old, who fought in World War II, who now earn more than $25,000 a year. They can't get...
They're too rich.
They're too rich. It's tax breaks for billionaires, but if you're making $26,000 a year and you fought in World War II and you're 80 years of age
rich.
And you're sick, you can't get into a VA health care facility. Now, that is an outrage. Furthermore, his budget, his new budget, will increase the prices, the cost that veterans have to pay for their prescription drugs and other fees. And now Calvin raises the important point that we have already have a VA system underfunded. What happens to the 7,000 wounded veterans who are coming back, men and women who have lost limbs, deeply hurt? Do we have the capability of taking care of them? The answer is no. So one of the reasons, if some of you have doubts as to who you should support, if you're a veteran, if you think, if you're an American, and you think that veterans who put their lives on the line defending this country have a right to get the benefits that they are entitled to, you should vote for Kerry.
Here's the question I have, Bernie, just to follow up on Calvin's question. How is it possible that George Bush can stand in front of these hand-picked audiences where people had to sign loyalty oaths and give DNA samples and whatever to get in, but, you know, and promise to have... it looked like half of them took Prozac before they stood there, but in any... I'm sorry, that's a cheap shot. How is it that Bush can stand in front of these groups and talk about all the support that he has provided to veterans if what you say is true? How
because
does he get away with
this is what he is doing. He's mixing up two separate issues. In terms of taking care of our veterans, the question that Calvin raised, there's no question. This guy has been an absolute disaster. Absolute disaster. But then what he does is he says to the troops, hey, we're at war, and we are behind you. So what they do is confuse the war issue with the veterans issue.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to say that a lot of the veterans organizations, or at least members of the veterans organizations, are catching on. There are some of our listeners who are pro-war, some are anti-war. I voted and helped lead the opposition against the war. But regardless of your point of view, the objective reality is that in terms of how Bush is dealing with the veterans, it is an absolute disgrace.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to Michael in Cleveland, Ohio. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. I met you and your wife in November of 2000 on a trip. And I don't know if you remember me or not. But anyhow, the reason I called, You talked about Clear Channel Communications. Interesting, in the city of Cleveland, they own between 6 and 8 of the radio stations, the programming, and we have no liberal talk or progressive talk radio in Cleveland. And what we do get is programming after program during prime time during the day that people are listening to, the Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and that right-wing Republican, conservative, Christian rhetoric. And an example of how powerful that is, I was at a party on Sunday. My cousin, I asked who she was voting for, and she said, Bush all the way. And I said, why? And her answer was, he'll keep me and my kids safe. Yeah. And I said, where do you get that from? And she said, I listen to Glenn Beck.
Yeah. That's well, you know, Michael, first of all, I've got to say, what Sinclair did recently, I think, was abominable. On the other hand, one of the fastest growing sectors for Air America Radio, which, of course, is one of my competitors, but, you know, God bless them, the other progressive voices out there on the air, are Clear Channel stations. This program is carried on Clear Channel stations. Clear Channel stations are figuring out that there's money to be made in liberal talk radio, and they're fundamentally in the business of making money. So I don't so much have a gripe with them. My concern is when a corporation that has control over the airwaves like Sinclair did produces their own daily talking points, like Sinclair does with this vice president who's this former CIA guy, I'm forgetting his name, and they order their TV stations to put him on every day. That's where I think that they've just hugely stepped over the line. But again, this gets back to the issue that we were talking about before. We've got to change the rules. Michael, thanks for the call. I'm sorry I pushed the button a little faster than I intended to. Let's move on to, unless you wanted to add, we've already talked about that topic. Bill in North Carolina. Bill, welcome to the program.
Yes, Tom.
Bill, you're going to have to speak up a little.
Yes, Tom. Can you hear me?
Yep. Just barely.
Okay. I've never seen or heard your program before, but I've seen Congressman Sanders over the years on C-SPAN, and I've been a great admirer of him, so thank you for what you've done, and thank you for C-SPAN. I'd like to ask you a question, Congressman. Paul O'Neill, Bob Woodward, Richard Clark, they all wrote the book saying that whenever the Bush administration took office, that they really planned on invading Iraq right from the very beginning. And I've always kind of had the theory in the back of my mind that it was really kind of a blood feud almost between the Bush family and the Saddam Hussein family. I know I saw Paul Lazon do an interview with George Bush Sr. We invaded Iraq. He said that he didn't hate anybody except Saddam Hussein. And I just wondered, you don't hear congressmen or people talking about that, but just behind the scenes, how many of your colleagues think that there is a real hatred between the two families, but you can't really come out and say that?
Well, I think...
In other words, this was more of a personal issue. Let me just, Bernie, this was 3 months before the war. This was George Bush's comment.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
And then we discover that a month before he said that, the Bush administration had notified the British that the invasion was underway.
Well, the point that you're making and that Bill made is the evidence is now pretty clear that well before 9/11, in fact, that Bush was thinking of removing Saddam Hussein from power. And Bill raises the question, why? I think it is quite possible there is something personal in the sense that this president felt that there was something a bit wrong when Saddam Hussein outlasted his own father in office. Also, there is evidence that Saddam Hussein tried to assassinate his father, and that's another reason. But I think there's also geopolitical reasons at work here as well, having to do with a whole Middle East policy, strong American presence.
The neocons, the whole neocon.
So I wouldn't make it's too simple to make it just personal, but there is, I think, a personal element in it. But it goes beyond that.
And now, also this week, the guy who was originally hired to ghostwrite A Charge to Keep, Bush's autobiography, and had 20 interviews with Bush and then was replaced by somebody else because he wasn't writing flowery enough oratory, has come out and from his tape-recorded interviews with Bush, this was just in yesterday's news, mentioned that Bush was looking at Margaret Thatcher and how she had the Falklands War and they came back and threw flowers at her and talking about how if he became president, he would want to have a war right away. He would want to be a war president. Well, that's the way to guarantee you're going to get reelected. He said his father squandered the opportunity by not extending the war up to the election.
Well, you know, without going on too long on this issue, if you hold Bush's philosophical point of view, which really the government should not be involved in health care, should not be involved in protecting the environment and so forth and so on, you're kind of left with the situation that the one strong role the government could play
is
on issues of war.
Yeah. Okay.
And that could make you a strong president. So.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to the phones. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And Jerome in Georgia is on the line. Hey, Jerome, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're live with us.
Hey, Tom, thanks. Excuse me, I'm a first-time caller. I'm going to be nervous.
That's quite all right. We've only got about a minute and a half.
Okay, I just wanted to ask Mr. Sanders why... And or when is he going to make his run for the White House?
There you go, Bernie.
Because this is what the Independent Party needs, is a serious person with some good ideals. And, yeah. You know, just want to tell him he'd have my vote.
Okay. Thank
Jerome,
you, Jerome.
That's very kind of you.
You know, he raises the issue of the Independent Party, though. I mean, Ralph Nader on TV yesterday called me a thumb-sucking liberal. I'm one of the group of 75 who signed this petition saying we supported Ralph 4 years ago. Don't vote for him. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, two things. Thank you very much, Jerome. But it gets the reason that people with my point of view would find it very hard to run for president in a serious way has to do with the money issue. There would be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars raised against, at this moment, under current campaign finance law, against any serious person who is prepared to stand up to the big money interest in this country. Let me say a word about Nader. He did not call me a thumb-sucking whatever.
Yeah, he called me one, though.
All right.
Got about 10 seconds here.
I've known Nader for many years. What he's doing now is very unfortunate, and it's a sad end to a brilliant career.
Yeah, I agree. It's tragic because he has done so much good for this country. It's 10 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. This is the real people's radio. Yes, the real free speech zone. No barbed wire fences here. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of world crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research is responsible for the following message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor by any candidate's committee.
Hello, my name is Cindy, and I am a progressive. For many years, I've supported Ralph Nader, always admiring his many accomplishments. However, at this critical time, I cannot support his candidacy. You see, I have Parkinson's disease, and embryonic stem cell research may one day save my life. George W. Bush has severely restricted funding for stem cell research. He also threatens to jail doctors and scientists who want to use nuclear transfer research to cure debilitating diseases. On the other hand, John Kerry vows to remove President Bush's restrictions and to openly fund this vital research. Ralph Nader recently admitted that he has no chance to win this presidential election. A vote for Nader can only be a vote for Bush. Please don't throw your vote away. My life depends on it. Thank you.
Cities are losing the fight against traffic gridlock, and that's costing a lot of time, gas, and money. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Across America, roads have been widened and mass transit systems expanded, and more people are working on computers at home. But cities are still losing the battle against highway congestion. The Texas Transportation Institute reports that the time people spend sitting in rush hour traffic has nearly tripled since 1982. Tim Lomax is a research engineer and co-author of the Institute's 2004 Urban Mobility Report. He says growing traffic congestion represents a waste of time and resources.
The annual delay per commuter during the peak period has grown from 16 hours to 46 hours since 1982 up to 2002. The cost of congestion has gone up to $63 billion in 2002, and that includes that delay plus 5.6 billion gallons of wasted fuel due to the traffic jams.
Lomax says the average commuter burns as much as half a tank of gasoline each month while idling in gridlock.
On a per-person basis, for the folks in the 85 urban areas we deal with, it's an average of 74 gallons per year, something like 6 gallons a month.
Lomax says economic growth in urban areas is the main driver of traffic congestion. Cities everywhere are developing outward, boosting the number of commuters on clogged streets and freeways. Lomax says individuals can take a number of steps to cut congestion and save money, time, and stress. He says commuters should combine trips, carpool, and use alternative forms of transportation when possible, and he says drivers should make sure their cars are in sound mechanical order to avoid breakdowns in heavy traffic. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I'm just an old truth teller. I'm your candid.
And welcome back. A couple of old truth tellers here. We're not quite old farts, are we? I don't know. Welcome
speak,
back.
Speak for yourself.
I'll do that. Okay. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. It's the end. It's the last segment of our brunch with Bernie our regular brunch with Bernie segment every Friday afternoon.
But you didn't serve me brunch. All I got is this damn glass of water.
There's food out there on the table, Bernie. Right. But we've been busy working here. Let's take one last call here. We've got about 3 minutes. Portland, Oregon. Alan in Portland, Oregon is on the line. Hey, Alan. Welcome to the show.
Oh, it's an honor to speak to both of you. One thing, I did see a presentation you made on corporate personhood, and I think that is just fundamental to what is happening.
The establishment
of corporate personhood was established, the ramifications of it.
You're talking about last month when Alan, you're talking about last month when I was in Oregon?
No, I just saw it on film on our cable access.
Oh, interesting. Okay. It must have been a film of that. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, we have good cable access around here in Portland. Also, if you didn't want to talk about that, maybe the price of our coalition of the willing. I'd like to know if maybe Mr. Sanders would expound on that. What actually did it cost us to get this coalition of the willing?
The coalition of the willing. Thanks, Alan.
I mean, is Alan suggesting that maybe some favors were made to some of these small countries? Is Alan suggesting that might be the case?
Could it be the coalition of the willing and the billing?
Yeah, that was certainly the case. I think in some cases debts were forgiven and so forth and so on. Alan raises the first question, which I know, Tom, you are authority on, and that is the personhood, if you like, of corporations.
Yeah.
And one way, incredible way we see this manifested is when we talk about unfettered free trade, there are very, very strong elements of the law protecting intellectual property rights. God forbid that somebody copies a disc, a CD. I mean, you're going to go to jail for a long time. But on the
Hopefully not me.
Because that is in violation of intellectual property rights that offend the profit margins of corporations.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you're a worker in Bangladesh and you're making 13 cents an hour and you're beaten if you don't reach your quota, hey, no problem. You're just a human being.
Yeah.
And that's one of the manifestations of the personhood of corporations.
One of the great problems we have. Jim in Texas, last comment. we're just about out of time. Actually, we are out of time. Jim, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to drop you there. That's going to wrap up. We've got about 30 seconds here, Bernie. Just a final comment from you for any undecided voters. I know you wanted to talk to them.
This is, I know you've heard it before, but it's true. This is the most important election in our lifetime. Don't look at all of the TV ads. Just look into your own heart. You tell me whether things are going better for the middle class and working families of this country. And you make that decision.
And you make the decision. It's the Tom Hartman Program, Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Senator John Kerry and rocker Bruce Springsteen told more than 80,000 people at their rally near Wisconsin's state capitol that working America is suffering under George W. Bush.
People have run out of their unemployment benefits. He says, no, we're not going to extend them. People are working for overtime, trying to get ahead. He says, no, we're going to cut overtime. Veterans are trying to get into VA. He says, no, we're not going to provide the money that the VA director wants. But he fights like hell to get that tax cut for the wealthiest people in America. We need a president who's not fighting for the drug companies and the oil companies and the power companies. We need a president who's fighting for you, for the middle class, for America.
Springsteen says he supports Kerry to uphold these values among others.
The human principle of economic justice, healing the sick, health care, feeding the hungry, housing the homeless, a living wage so folks don't have to break their backs and still not make ends meet.
Kerry says when he wins November 2nd, he'll attack the problem of exporting of American jobs.
When I'm president, we're going to shut the loophole that rewards the company that take jobs overseas, and we're going to reward the companies that create jobs and keep them here in the United States.
Kerry vows never to privatize Social Security and to lower the cost of health care for workers.
The world's second largest tech service provider offshored more than 20,000 jobs to places like Mexico, India, and Hungary by the end of 2003. So it comes as no surprise to critics of offshoring that Electronic Data Services announced early this week that it's offering an early retirement plan to over 9,000 U.S. workers. More than 17,000 of the jobs offshored by EDS were in the customer service field. However, at the end of last year, the company sent nearly 2,400 jobs for software developers and engineers abroad. In its announcement, EDS says that the early retirements are part of a larger plan to reduce its U.S. workforce by up to 20,000 employees. Students in Peoria, Illinois are getting a first-hand lesson in organized labor. 125 clerical staff members formed picket lines outside of Peoria Public Schools yesterday. According to a representative for the Peoria Federation of Support Staff, the strike began because the school district has not negotiated in good faith. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey management, skimping to save a couple bucks on heating costs in the workplace could be causing your workers to make more errors. A new report from Cornell University reveals that when office temperature in a month-long study increased from 68 to 77 degrees, typing errors fell by 44% and output jumped by 150%. The study also finds that raising the temperature to a comfortable level saves an employer on average $2 per worker per hour. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We were given these ideas that there's weapons of mass destruction, but where are the weapons of mass destruction? They said they were so sure where they were, but where are they? When we were over there, we looked around. I was on an intelligence gathering team. We looked in scientific installations. We never found anything. And it was just a lie. And that wasn't a proper use of American troops. That wasn't a proper use of my life, or my friends' lives, or the Marines who I've seen die around me. It's not a proper use.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
You might have heard the news that George W. suffered the embarrassment of having the Crawford, Texas newspaper endorse his opponent. You know you're in a heap of political hurt when your hometown paper rejects you. This news story was an amusing novelty, but it's really much bigger than that. For the editorial by the Lone Star Iconoclast is the best reasoned, best written piece I've yet read about why George W. should be rejected. It leads off like this. Few Americans would have voted for George W. 4 years ago if he had promised that, as president, he would empty the Social Security Trust Fund by $507 billion to help offset fiscal irresponsibility and at the same time slash Social Security benefits, cut Medicare by 17% and reduce veterans' benefits and military pay, eliminate overtime pay for millions of Americans and raise oil prices by 50%. Give tax cuts to businesses that sent American jobs overseas and, in fact, by policy, encouraged their departure. Give away billions of dollars in government contracts without competitive bids. Involve this country in a deadly and highly questionable war and take a budget surplus and turn it into the worst deficit in the history of the United States, creating a debt in just 4 years that will take generations to repay. These were the elements of a hidden agenda that surfaced only after he took office. The publishers of the Iconoclast are not a bunch of lefty Bush haters. Indeed, they endorsed George in 2000, and the tone of this 04 editorial is not one of partisan glee, but of disappointment and sadness, saying repeatedly that he let us down. This is Jim Hightower saying, in the past, Bush has told voters who are unsure about him to listen to Texans like those in Crawford, who he says know him best. To read the full text of this powerful editorial by some Crawfordites who truly do know George, go to iconoclast-texas.com.
Well, Mr. Quentin, I have your loan application here. I see you want to finance one of our big screen TVs.
Oh, yeah, I love that TV.
Of course you do. The thing is, your credit report has a few hiccups or bumps.
Well, bumps, yes.
What we call red flags or warnings.
You see, I can...
Actually, you have huge gaping chasms of incredibly bad decision-making.
Okay, I can explain.
I mean monumental credit mistakes. I mean, phenomenally ridiculous, laughable, really. I mean, oh, Mr. Quentin, I gotta frame this one.
Before you go for a loan, be prepared with ScorePower from Equifax. You'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score. All for just $14.95. It's the first step to getting the things you want. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Get the power. ScorePower at Equifax.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 7 minutes past the hour. TomHartman.com, our website, if you want to drop into one of the most interesting conversations on the whole internet. Boy, the chat room is really full of folks today. Very often it is. You'll find some of the most erudite, fascinating, interesting, eccentric, friendly people in all the cyberspace there on our live chat. Just go to TomHartman.com and click live chat, and it'll take you over there. Interesting news for the day. An 18-year-old Marine recruit remained in jail on Wednesday, charged with threatening... This is what happened. You know, before I do this story, you know, John Stewart got a lot of flack for going on Crossfire and saying, you know, you guys are picking on each other too much. You're making, you know, basically saying World Wrestling Federation-style politics is not the healthiest thing for America. That was John Stewart's suggestion. And those of you who are regular listeners to this program know that I generally don't do WWF politics. I don't call people names. You know, it's not. I'm frankly more concerned with democracy. There are some issues where I agree with historic or traditional conservatives. There are some where I agree with historic or traditional liberals. I would call myself a progressive, whatever. But the, you know, does progressive believe in a balance? But absolutely, in my opinion. So it's like, you know, how do you define these things? I think, as John Kerry said the other day, the labels are breaking down. The labels are breaking down terribly. But the problem is that in order to maintain political power, there are people who are cynically promoting these labels, aggressively and cynically promoting, oh, he's just a Massachusetts liberal. I'm impressed, frankly, that John Kerry hasn't been slapping George Bush with the conservative, you know, compassionate conservative, and ridiculing him for it, because there's certainly ample room to do that, and a lot of people do that on the left. I haven't. I've refrained from it, and I'm impressed that John Kerry has. But here we have this story, and, you know, when I first started reading it, I was going to read it as a funny story, but, you know, it really, it has a subtext of tragedy, as comedy so often does to it. This from the Orlando Sun-Sentinel, yesterday's paper. An 18-year-old Marine recruit remained in jail on Wednesday, charged with threatening to stab his girlfriend over her choice for president. Stephen Scott Soper of Lake Worth, he's an enlistee in the Marines, who will enter the Marines as soon as he passes his GED test, solidly supports Bush. He allegedly told girlfriend Stacy Solera, quote, "You'll never live to see the election." Palm Beach Sheriff's Office deputies called to the home in Lake Worth said they had to use a taser, an electronic stun gun, to subdue Soper. They described Soper as enraged and said he was holding Solera captive. He was armed with a screwdriver and threatening to stab her in the neck, they said. When Solera eventually broke free, a deputy fired a taser, shocking him into submission. Charged with aggravated assault, he remains in jail. And, of course, he's on his way to see the shrink. So, you've got this. We have you know, some real problems here. And I think that there's also this sense of outrage. I mean, there's an absolute sense of outrage. And a sense of concern. And our Howard Beale alert for the day. This is our I'm mad as hell, right?
It's, you've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs.
It's from the movie Network.
I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Yeah, well, see, there's a place for righteous indignation, I believe. And so our Howard Beale Award for the day goes to Marshall Whitman. Marshall Whitman is the former legislative director of the Christian Coalition. He was the communications director for the Republican candidacy of John McCain in the year 2000. And here's what he recently wrote for public consumption, and I quote, "If George W. Bush is reelected, unlimited corporate power, cynicism, and division will ride high in the saddle. And without a doubt, the GOP has merely become a vehicle for unbridled corporate power. Such a party cannot provide a home for a movement that strives for national greatness." Again, quoting Marshall Whitman, former legislative director of the Christian Coalition, communications director of McCain for president, John Kerry, 2000. John Kerry's ideas are far preferable to George W. Bush's, and with his gesture this summer in approaching McCain about the vice presidency, Kerry demonstrated that he is committed to a new politics of national unity. So thank you, Marshall Whitman. Well said. I wanted to get into the concept of fascism. I think most Americans, when they hear the word fascism, they think Adolf Hitler. And Hitler may have started out as a fascist. He really wasn't. He was a madman, a maniacal dictator. He was a totalitarian. He was more of a Stalinist, frankly. I mean, Hitler and Stalin had more in common. Mussolini was the fascist. Mussolini, in fact, invented the word. The word fascist comes from the word fasce, which is a bundle of sticks, which was the symbol of the Roman Empire. It was a bundle of sticks with a rope around it with an axe sticking out of the top. And the idea was that you can break one stick, you can't break a bundle of sticks. And Mussolini came up with this idea that if you were to make something larger and stronger than government itself and bring that in with government, that you would end up with something that would survive, that would endure. The road to hell is paved with good intentions, and Mussolini's idea, if you believe his writings, was to create a state that was stable. And he wrote about this in 1929 in the Italian dictionary. He said fascism should more rightly or more correctly be called corporatism, for it is the merger of corporate and state interests. In 1987, in the American Heritage Dictionary, the definition of fascism. Fascism is the merging of business and state interests combined with belligerent nationalism. So here we have the situation where this is not the first time that this issue has been raised, or the first time that this has been talked about. Henry Wallace was the vice president under Franklin Roosevelt. He was one of four, I believe. Every year Roosevelt ran, he got a new vice president with him. And Wallace was the vice president from 1941 to 1945. And in April 4th, 1944, Henry Wallace wrote an op-ed piece that was published in the New York Times, April 9th, 1944, about American fascism. In fact, he was asked the question, the New York Times editor, the executive editor of the New York Times, asked him, well, here's what Henry Wallace says. He says, they asked me to write a piece answering the following question. What is a fascist? How many fascists have we? How dangerous are they? And then he continued. This is from the New York Times, April 9th, 1944. The really dangerous American fascists are not those who are hooked up directly or indirectly with the Axis. That being, you know, Germany and Japan. The FBI has its finger on those. The dangerous American fascist is the man who wants to do in the United States in an American way what Hitler did in Germany in a Prussian way. The American fascist would prefer not to use violence. His method is to poison the channels of public information. With a fascist, the problem is never how best to present the truth to the public, but how best to use the news to deceive the public into believing the fascist and his group and giving them more money and more power. Fascism, that was Mussolini's quote. He went on to say, before I get up with Wallace, Mussolini in 1923 wrote this pamphlet called A Doctrine of Fascism. He said, if classical liberalism spells individualism, fascism spells government, but not government of, by, and for we the people. Instead, it would be a government of, by, and for the most powerful corporate interests in the nation. In 1938, he dissolved Parliament and replaced it with the Camera del Fasci delle Corporazioni. You can tell I don't speak Italian. In other words, in English, the Chamber of the Fascist Corporations. Mussolini replaced the elected representatives with representatives of the corporations. What do we have now in America? How many of our Congress... You know, Bernie Sanders is the only member of the United States Congress that I know of who's not deeply in the pocket of big corporations. I mean, maybe there's another one out there. You tell me. Back to Henry Wallace. He said, if we define an American fascist as one who, in case of conflict, puts money and power ahead of human beings, then there are undoubtedly several million fascists in the United States. There are probably several hundred thousand if we narrow the definition to include only those who, in their search for money and power, are ruthless and deceitful. They are patriotic in time of war because it's in their interest to be so. But in time of peace, they follow power and the dollar wherever it leads. Fascism, Henry Wallace, Vice President of the United States, 1944. Henry Wallace wrote, fascism is a worldwide threat to the United States, will come after this war is over, and will manifest within the United States itself. He went on by saying, still another danger represented by those who pay lip service to democracy and the common welfare, in their insatiable greed for money and the power which money gives, do not hesitate, surreptitiously, to evade the laws designed to safeguard the public from monopolistic extortion. Monopolistic extortion? As in the big getting big. See, this was the thing. In the 1980s, the beginning of American fascism in a big way was the Reagan Revolution. When Ronald Reagan said, you know, we're going to suspend enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act. We're going to allow corporations to get as big as they want. We're just going to go with a free market. It's, yeah, it's a free market is a fine. And those of you who listen to the program regularly know that I am all in favor of free enterprise. I'm all in favor of capitalism. I think it's a great thing. I run a small business. I've started a number of businesses. This show is a business. I'm all in favor of people making money. I'm all in favor of people having businesses. But we have to recognize that business is legally enacted gameplay. That's all it is. It's just like football. It's legally enacted gameplay where the goal is to make money. It's a noble goal. It's a wonderful thing. I mean, provide for your family, do some good, produce a good product, make a good service, something like that. But we, the people, in a democratic republic like we have here, get to set the rules. And when we, the people, define the rules as if you're going to play the game of making money, first you have to do it in a way that doesn't harm we, the people. In fact, that at some level even helps we the people, even if it's just making some silly thing. You want to make silly string? That's cool. Just so long as it's not poisoning people. But the American fascists, as it were, would say, no. We've got to get government, unnecessary government regulation out of the way. We the people have no business telling those in business what they're doing. Henry Wallace. Well, I've made his point. I don't need to go into this. Here, the myth of fascist efficiency has deluded many people. Democracy to crush fascism internally must develop the ability to keep people fully unemployed and at the same time balance the budget. It must put human beings first and dollars second. It must appeal to reason and decency and not to violence and deceit. We must not tolerate oppressive government or industrial oligarchy in the form of monopolies and cartels. Just as an oppressive government can be a destructive force, so can an oppressive corporate power. There is a reasonable balance. There is an absolutely reasonable balance, and that's what I think progressives in the United States, liberals, are in favor of, and what we have historically seen. We'll talk more about that after this. We'll take a few calls. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so are very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Hayes Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Acid rain is not a problem, said the businessman. But all the fish are belly up and floating round. And there's nothing growing from the ground. Just ask Farmer Brown.
What a great song. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Our show is sponsored today by Small Dog Electronics. High technology for low prices. They're at 1-800-511-MAX. 1-800-511-MACS and also smalldog.com on the web. Our program also sponsored by the Organic Wine Company. Yes, grapes are one of the most heavily pesticide-laced products, agricultural products out there. So if you have a concern about that, organic wine, imported from France, where the standards for organics are just incredible and the flavors are extraordinary. The organicwinecompany.com or ecowine.com. 1-888-ECO-WINE is their telephone number. And the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research, www.cascr.org, working hard to get stem cell research on the national agenda, something that I think is a very important and very, very righteous thing to be doing. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Let's take a few calls here. Tammy in Fort Wayne, Indiana, or I'm sorry, Martha in Fort Wayne, Indiana is on the line. Hey, Martha, welcome to the program.
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, great. We're on the air together.
Can I think you're the greatest.
Thank you.
Your show is the greatest. And I'd like to ask you, can I just talk about whatever I want to talk about?
You may.
Okay. What I would like...
Within reason.
...for them to really do is investigate Bush on letting those people go back to their country.
What people?
Bin Laden's family.
Oh, you mean why did the Bush administration allow the Saudi family to fly out of the United States right after 9/11? Is that
right.
What you're talking about?
Do you know why?
Frankly, I don't know why.
No, you don't.
None of us know why, because it hasn't been investigated. Okay.
Bush paid Bin Laden to do this, to the terrorists.
You think so?
Yes.
See, I got to say, Martha, I disagree with you. I'm sorry.
I know you would. I mean, most people will, honestly.
Now, here's what I do think, though. I mean, if you want to get into the... Here's my level of conspiracy theory on this. Yeah. I think that Bush knew that something horrible was going to happen.
Yeah.
I think that if he... And there's ample evidence of this. And that if... he had paid attention to Richard Clark, if he had done the things necessary, that he could have prevented this. And whether he didn't prevent it because he was incompetent, or whether he didn't prevent it because back in 1998, the Project for a New American Century was talking about how we have to invade Iraq. You know, they wrote this letter to Bill Clinton. It was signed by Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, Feith, Rumsfeld, Jeb Bush, and Dick Cheney. Signed this letter in 1998, still on their website, newamericancentury.org, signed this letter to Bill Clinton saying, you must attack Iraq, right? And in their documents, they say, we're not going to be able to make this thing happen unless there's another Pearl Harbor-like event.
Right.
And so
let me say mine.
Okay, all right. Go for it.
Listen.
Go for your concern.
And I'm normally said, I know you're not going to believe it, but it's about 10 people in my group, and we all feel the same way.
Yeah.
Bush's brother went to meet with Bin Laden's family. Do you know about that?
No, I don't.
Oh, you didn't know about that. Okay. We went to meet with Bin Laden's brother. Yeah. And then, I don't want to look at the TV.
Well, what I do know is that George Bush himself was bailed out of one of his failing businesses by Bin Laden's brother.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's not like there weren't connections between the families.
But there was a meeting between the families.
Yeah.
And
many of them, by the way.
Yeah. Bush's ratings were way down when he first got in there. So he set this whole thing up. Now, he wasn't supposed, the 15 men that was in that airplane wasn't supposed to hit it that hard.
Yeah.
They weren't supposed to. They were supposed to do a little scare and keep going. But they went overboard and did more than what they were supposed to do for killing all those people.
Yeah.
But
Tammy, we're out of time. You've made a good point. I mean, you've made your point, and I appreciate it. And I got to say, I think that the fact that there are so many people, and you're not the first person who's called this program with that opinion, the fact that there are so many people who strongly hold that belief tells me that there is something seriously wrong with the credibility of this administration. I mean, they'll spend $50 million to investigate the Challenger and $3 million to investigate 9/11. It's a problem. 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Senator John Kerry and rocker Bruce Springsteen told more than 80,000 people at their rally near Wisconsin's state capitol that working America is suffering under George W. Bush.
People have run out of their unemployment benefits. He says, no, we're not going to extend them. People are working for overtime, trying to get ahead. He says, no, we're going to cut overtime. Veterans are trying to get into VA. He says, no, we're not going to provide the money that the VA director wants. But he fights like hell to get that tax cut for the wealthiest people in America. We need a president who's not fighting for the drug companies and the oil companies and the power companies. We need a president who's fighting for you, for the middle class, for America.
Springsteen says he supports Kerry to uphold these values, among others.
The human principles of economic justice, healing the sick, health care, feeding the hungry, housing the homeless, a living wage so folks don't have to break their backs and still not make ends meet.
Kerry says when he wins November 2nd, he'll attack the problem of exporting of American jobs.
When I'm president, we're going to shut the loophole that rewards the company that take jobs overseas, and we're going to reward the companies that create jobs and keep them here in the United States.
Kerry vows never to privatize Social Security and to lower the cost of health care for workers.
The world's second largest tech service provider offshored more than 20,000 jobs to places like Mexico, India, and Hungary by the end of 2003. So it comes as no surprise to critics of offshoring that Electronic Data Services announced early this week that it's offering an early retirement plan to over 9,000 U.S. workers. More than 17,000 of the jobs offshored by EDS were in the customer service field. However, at the end of last year, the company sent nearly 2,400 jobs for software developers and engineers abroad. In its announcement, EDS says that the early retirements are part of a larger plan to reduce its U.S. workforce by up to 20,000 employees. Students in Peoria, Illinois are getting a first-hand lesson in organized labor. 125 clerical staff members formed picket lines outside of Peoria Public Schools yesterday. According to a representative for the Peoria Federation of Support Staff, the strike began because the school district has not negotiated in good faith. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey management, skimping to save a couple bucks on heating costs in the workplace could be causing your workers to make more errors. A new report from Cornell University reveals that when office temperature in a month-long study increased from 68 to 77 degrees, typing errors fell by 44% and output jumped by 150%. The study also finds that raising the temperature to a comfortable level saves an employer on average $2 per worker per hour. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Took all the trees and put them in a tree museum. And they charged the people $1.50 to see them.
And welcome back, my friends. You know, the trees in the museum, we're moving in that direction. You know, 200,000 acres of rainforest every single day vanishing from the world. The world's lungs. This is scary stuff. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's move along. We'll go to Tammy in Orlando, Florida, since I keep saying your name here, Tammy. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Tom, you mentioned Hitler earlier. I've got an actual quote by Hitler that I heard on a PBS documentary. A good liar must also be a good magician.
Yeah.
Does that remind you of anybody?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Back just after 9/11 and just before the invasion of Afghanistan, I wrote a piece for commondreams.org, which you can find at tomhartman.com if you click on the articles on democracy and scroll way down, because it's 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago, called The Magic Trick of War. And I talk about how when I was a kid, I was actually a magician. My best friend's dad was a professional magician, and Chuck and I were learned magic, and we did kids' shows, and we were on the local TV show and stuff like that. And the first thing you learn in magic is if you're going to do something with this hand, you make sure that everybody's looking at the other hand. And you get their attention with the other hand, and then you can, you know, like that. And I saw war as a magic trick, you know, as a way of diverting the attention of people away from the real issues of the United States. And this administration has played it like a fiddle.
I just say one more thing?
Sure. Go ahead.
I don't believe Bush will reinstate the draft, and I'll tell you why. Fewer students are enrolling in college because they can't afford the 40% rise in tuition since Bush took office, and jobs continue to pour overseas. So it's very likely that many of our young people will be forced to join the military just to get a job.
Well, it's the situation we have right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the situation. Why did Jessica Lynch join the military? She wanted enough money to go to college to become a teacher. I mean, that is the situation. Why do people join the reserves? To get a little extra cash.
Yeah, we have recruitment stations right here in our local high school where they set up booths to get the kids, you know, before they even go on to college.
You'll find in my book, What Would Jefferson Do? One of the things that really shocked me when I was reading through the letters of Thomas Jefferson when I was doing the research for this book was that on the one hand, Jefferson argued aggressively, vigorously. I mean, he was just like just raging. In 1787, he was in Paris, France. He was the U.S. envoy to France when James Madison sent him the first draft of the U.S. Constitution. And Jefferson was saying, there must be a Bill of Rights on this thing. You can't just have a Constitution without a Bill of Rights. And Madison was saying, but we hold all the rights. The preamble says, we the people are creating this government. We are the owners of the government. And Jefferson said, it doesn't matter. You and I understand that we the people are the sole holders of the rights. Future generations may forget. and tyrants may arise, and we must at least put a rudimentary Bill of Rights into the Bill of Rights so that those people in the future never forget that we, the people, are the holder of the rights. And then he went through and he listed what he thought the rights should be. And everything that's in the Bill of Rights right now was in his list, plus two. There were two things that didn't make it. One was he said there should be a ban on corporate monopolies. Mm-hmm. Corporations should not be allowed to own other corporations. Corporations should not be allowed to live beyond the lifespan of a normal person. Corporations should not be able to operate in more than one realm of business, because he saw, because they had just fought a revolution against, in large part, the British East India Company. That's what the Boston Tea Party was all about. So number one, he wanted a ban on corporate monopolies. But number two, he wanted a ban on a standing army. He said we shouldn't have an army during time of peace. He wanted a navy to protect the borders, but he said we shouldn't have an army during time of peace because he'd seen too many countries where military coups had happened. At the same time, though, Jefferson argued that there should be universal conscription, that every single individual, every person, you know, once they became of age, once they became 17, 18 years old, should be required to give a portion of a year or as much as a year of service to their nation. And whether it was military or in some other fashion. And I thought that was absolutely brilliant. I lived in Germany for a year back in 86, and they have that requirement. You have to spend a year either in the army, or you can work in a hospital, you can work in a school, you can do whatever you want. It's a rite of passage for young people. It bonds people to the nation. It creates a sense of we're all in this together. It's really a fascinating and powerful thing. And so I got to say, Tammy, I am totally in favor I don't want to say a draft, of universal conscription, because then we won't, and one of the points that Jefferson made was, we don't want to have a nation of pauper soldiers, of people who are willing to be shot at for a shilling. It was a quote from Jefferson.
Right. And that's what we have now. Another thing Jefferson wanted was free education for all children. He didn't care about private schools maximizing their profits.
Oh, absolutely. It's why he started the University of Virginia, and he was so proud of it that he asked that on his tombstone they not say that he was president of the United States, that they say that he founded the University of Virginia, which was free. It was 100% free. He believed that everybody should have free access to education, regardless of their income, from birth to the highest educational level that they could reach, and that was the way to build a great nation. Jefferson was a great liberal. Thanks, Tammy, for the call. I appreciate it. In fact, our quote from the day, from George Washington: as mankind becomes more liberal, they will be more apt to allow that all those who conduct themselves as worthy members of the community are equally entitled to the protections of civil government. I hope, George Washington wrote, I hope ever to see America among the foremost nations of justice and liberality. Why don't we reclaim this word? Just to wrap up this thing on fascism, the point that I was making with all of this is that the classic definition, the true definition of fascism, is a government in bed with corporations. And here we have now a situation, for example, this a piece of Molly Ivins wrote a while ago. This is just great. For example, the top corporations have paid zero taxes from 1996 to 1998, including AT&T, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Chase Manhattan, Enron, ExxonMobil, General Electric, Microsoft, Pfizer, and Philip Morris, gave $150.1 million to political campaigns from 1991 to 2001. So they invested $150 million. What did they get back? $55 billion in tax breaks. $55 billion. Dollars in tax breaks. This is mind-boggling. I mean, it's just absolutely mind-boggling. And at the same time, and then you get these people going, ah, but only the rich are paying taxes. Well, it turns out the poorest fifth of Americans, those people with an average income of $7,946, if you add up all taxes, if you pay add up the sales tax they pay, if you add up the property taxes they pay, or they pay via their rent as a portion of their rent, if you add up payroll taxes, you know, which are deducted, if you add the cumulative tax rate for the poorest fifth of Americans is 18%. That's the average tax that they're paying. The richest fifth, with an average income of $116,666, pays 19%. And those in the middle quintiles, 14%, 16%, and 17%. I just have to share with you this one. This was a law. You know, Teddy Roosevelt, the Republican Roosevelt, in 1907, fought vigorously and passed in 1907 a law that made it a felony for corporations to participate in politics with money. And here's one of the laws. This is an old Wisconsin statute. This was on the books in Wisconsin, and laws like this were on the books in every single state in the Union from the founding of this country. See, when Jefferson wrote to Madison and said, we have to put into the Bill of Rights a ban on corporate monopolies, Madison replied to him and said, we don't need that because the word corporation doesn't exist in the Constitution. Corporations cannot be created at the federal level. Corporations are created at the state level. Yeah, there are a few federal corporations now, like Amtrak, but they require an act of Congress. Corporations are created at the state level. And he said the states will control these. They're close to them. They know what's going on. And all the states have all the laws that you're recommending, Mr. Jefferson, so we don't need to do this. Let me read to you. This just happens to be from Wisconsin, but every state in the Union had these kind of laws on the books. This one actually didn't get repealed until 1954 by accident. For almost 100 years, they hadn't realized it was still on the books. But this was the law of the land, and this is why we don't have dynasties left over from the founding generation. The law is titled Political. It's from Section 4479A, Section 1, Chapter 492 of the Civil Code of the State of Wisconsin, Political Contributions by Corporations. No contribution doing business in this state shall pay or contribute or offer consent or agree to pay or contribute directly or indirectly any money, property, free service of its officers or employees or thing of value to any political party, organization, committee, or individual for any political party, any political purpose whatsoever, or for the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind, or to promote or defeat the candidacy of any person for nomination, appointment, or such corporation who shall violate this act shall be punished by imprisonment in the state prison for a period of not less than 1 nor more than 5 years, or by both. If a corporation, they shall be subject to a double penalty, and if a domestic corporation, in other words, a corporation doing business in that state, it shall be dissolved. It's the death penalty for corporations. If a foreign or non-resident corporation, its right to do business in this state is declared forfeit. This was the law in the United States for half of the lifespan of this country. And Mussolini said, you got to get in with the corporations, you know, it's a good thing. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. By the way, Ira, it looks like line two is ringing. Lee in Austin, Texas is on the line. Hey, Lee, what are your thoughts on all this?
Good morning, everyone, now, and thank you for taking my call, sir. I appreciated hearing from your congressman. He sounds like one of the few politicians with a square head on his shoulders.
Yeah, I agree. He's a gift to our state. Even if I didn't live in Vermont, I'd want to have Bernie on every week.
Well, he reminds me a bit of our own Congressman Doggett. But on with the situation that I wanted to speak with you about today, I am a Gulf War I veteran, served for 6 months and some change in Southeast Asia, in Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and Bahrain. Being a female over there, I think I was maybe more in tune with what those ladies went through because I was allowed to speak with them and hear their thoughts. Okay. I came back home with a Gulf War illness due to being up in Iraq and Kuwait when they were bombing the caches of ammunition and armaments, such as what happened at Kamacia, which was the only one that ever made the news because some brave soldier went in there with his video camera. And
but it happened all over, didn't it, Lee?
Yes, sir, it did.
Lee, what's your point, if you don't mind? I'm sorry. But
The point is George W.'s dad ignored what happened at Kamacia and the rest, and were hundreds of thousands of us ill. George Bush Jr. has, well, not quite Jr., but the W has cut out so much of the VA budgets. It's beginning to close hospitals here and there, as his dad did military bases.
Yeah.
And we've got more people coming home sick and injured, and there's going to be even more as they get into more of these armaments. And plus, the region is still heavily toxic from the first Gulf War.
Yeah, not to mention depleted uranium.
Right, depleted uranium was another thing I was going to talk about.
Yeah.
I was working at the Texas Military Forces headquarters at Camp Mabry, Austin, and there came a communique that said from the DOD that said about how specifically careful to be while cleaning these depleted uranium coated Abrams tanks when they came home, and before it could be disseminated throughout the Texas military forces, it came back from the DOD, Never mind. That was a mistake.
Yeah, I know. This is an incredible tragedy, Lee. I absolutely agree with you. And it's one of the huge issues that more and more veterans are raising. What would you like to do about it? I mean, where do we go from here with this? Did you just want to talk about it? You just mentioned it on the air?
No, sir. I have some definite plans that would be helpful to the government if the government would listen to its constituents.
Okay. So, you know, what I have to say, Lee, is let me encourage you to be in touch with your elected officials, to get out there and get in touch with your elected officials and speak out there and keep calling into programs like this. I can't do an entire show on this today. We have done entire shows on Gulf War illness and on depleted uranium, or entire hours, you know, segments. But the phone lines are just all lit up. I'm going to move along. You've had a say, and a good say. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Let's go to Vince in Trenton, New Jersey. Hey, Vince,
yes,
welcome
hi.
To the program.
Hello. I want to run through this quick. My
sure.
topic is about the health care,
yeah.
and specifically how George Bush and the Republicans are saying that trial lawyers are the cause of it.
Trial lawyers are the cause of 0.5% of the total of the increase in health care costs over the last 4 years, which have gone up almost 40 to 50%, depending on
right.
whose numbers you're looking at. It's a joke. It is a
okay.
lie.
I want to talk about prescription drugs. Now, they tell you that 180,000 people are killed each year and 2 million injured from prescription drug adverse reactions. Well, that's only for people that are actually in the hospital. If you add in all the people who see these ads on TV that say, talk to your doctor to see if this drug's right for you, and they get a prescription, and then all the doctor errors, it comes to 495,000 people that are killed each year and 4 million injured.
Yeah.
Now, there's a cost to that, and it comes to $2 trillion over 6 years just to treat. And John Kerry says he needs $100 billion a year to fully fund everyone with health insurance in this country.
Yeah.
Well, there's $339 billion right there.
You're absolutely right, and you make a great point, Vince, and I appreciate it. In fact, you've touched on one of my absolute favorite topics, and that is that when I was growing up in the United States, if you wanted to be in the healthcare business, if you wanted to run a hospital, if you wanted to run an insurance company, you had to be a not-for-profit.
All the doctor errors, it comes to 495,000 people that are killed each year and 4 million injured.
Yeah.
Now, there's a cost to that, and it comes to $2 trillion over 6 years just to treat. And John Kerry says he needs $100 billion a year to fully fund everyone with health insurance in this country.
Yeah.
Well, there's $339 billion right there.
You're absolutely right, and you make a great point, Vince, and I appreciate it. In fact, you've touched on one of my absolute favorite topics, and that is that when I was growing up in the United States, if you wanted to be in the healthcare business, if you wanted to run a hospital, if you wanted to run an insurance company, you had to be a not-for-profit corporation, because everybody understood that the first goal of what you were delivering was to keep people well, was to deliver health care. Whereas now, you know, here we have Bill Frist, his family becoming, you know, multi-millionaires. I mean, the family company, the company that the family built and sold off, just paid an $800 million fine for defrauding the citizens of the United States. Bill Frist, this guy who is one of many who has gotten so incredibly rich off the fact that we have taken what used to be not-for-profit hospitals and not-for-profit insurance company. I mean, it's an okay reality if you're just making money, but in the healthcare business, it's a disaster. And this is one of the problems we're facing. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research is responsible for the following message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor by any candidate's committee.
Hello, my name is Cindy, and I am a progressive. For many years, I've supported Ralph Nader, always admiring his many accomplishments. However, at this critical time, I cannot support his candidacy. You see, I have Parkinson's disease, and embryonic stem cell research may one day save my life. George W. Bush has severely restricted funding for stem cell research. He also threatens to jail doctors and scientists who want to use nuclear transfer research to cure debilitating diseases. On the other hand, John Kerry vows to remove President Bush's restrictions and to openly fund this vital research. Ralph Nader recently admitted that he has no chance to win this presidential election. A vote for Nader can only be a vote for Bush. Please don't throw your vote away. My life depends on it. Thank you.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
A changing world economy has made it more difficult to forge global treaties on the environment. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. When the Montreal Protocol was created in 1987, it was hailed as a model treaty for dealing with international environmental issues. The protocol called for phasing out chemicals that damage the Earth's high-altitude ozone layer. Ken Konka is co-editor of a new book called Green Planet Blues. Konka says the world has taken a step back from global accords.
We had the ozone agreement in the 1980s, and that led to a lot of optimism that we would be able to create global framework agreements on problems like biodiversity, climate change, the world's ocean, these sort of genuinely globally reaching problems and globally reaching systems. Well, the decade of the 1990s taught that in a rapidly restructuring world economy, that was simply not going to be possible. So there's been a bit of a stepping back from that, and I think where most of the energy is these days is on some of these more locally manifested problems that affect people's livelihoods.
Problems like water supplies, deforestation, and spreading deserts. Konka says efforts are focusing on these more local and regional scales.
We're in a perplexing situation where in some ways there's been progress, but that progress has largely been people starting to get issues on the agenda, people starting to get organized for change. At some point that has to start to translate into outcomes for people's livelihoods and outcomes for ecological health, or these localized issues in particular are only going to get more contentious.
Konka says global scale treaties will likely remain on the shelf as long as international environmental efforts stay focused on those more immediate local issues. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
We found a better way of making it seem clean. We built an electronic voting machine and then we sold these suckers nationwide. But we're the only ones who know what's on the inside.
Yes, welcome back. The voting machine song, 5 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Billy in Santa Cruz, California, one of our regular callers. Hey, Billy, welcome to the program.
It's a little scary to actually be able to see you and talk to you at the same time.
Well,
you're good looking.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Billy. That's very kind of you.
You know, but you're not keeping up with what's really going on in corporate America.
I'm not. Okay.
No,
what is?
You said that it's all about profit. And the fact is that I think that might have been the case.
No, it's all about power. It's all about power.
It might have been the case when most Americans were not stockholders. But what we found now is that it's actually not about profit for the corporation, but it's literally only about personal profit for the management of the corporation.
Yeah.
You know, How much did the Kmart guy who took over in bankruptcy just take down?
Yeah, I don't have the numbers, but I know what you're talking about, and I absolutely agree. I mean, this is the thing. This is Jefferson wrote about this extensively in arguing for an inheritance tax. In fact, the first piece of legislation that he introduced in the House of Burgesses when he became a member of the Parliament of Virginia, long before any before the United States was a country. This is back in the late 1760s. The first piece of legislation he passed or introduced, it failed, was one that would strip primogeniture. The oldest son inherits everything, and he wrote at length about how the accumulated wealth is a danger to democracy. We can't
have
a new aristocracy. I'm not saying this in a Marxist point of view. I think it's fine to get rich, but there have to be appropriate limits. And this is why Roosevelt had a 90% top tax rate on people who earn the equivalent in today's dollars of about $100 million a year.
In fact, that's what when America really went wrong. When we really went wrong was when Reagan took the top tax rate down.
From 70 down to in the 30s.
Because
absolutely.
It pays these guys to steal as much as they can because they get to keep it. If we took the gross amounts, when you start to make over $10 million a year, if we took 90% of that, then people wouldn't need to make $10 million a year. We wouldn't have that incredible reward for that incredible greed.
Yeah.
I want to move on just real quick.
There's not time. I just have to say, Billy, there's no coincidence that the raising of that top marginal rate by Roosevelt in the 30s up to 90%, and it's not being reduced until the 1980s by Reagan, coincided with the rise of the middle class from the 1930s into the 40s and the 50s to a point where 70% of American families could actually raise a family, put their kids through school, pay for their health care, provide for their retirement on the wages of a single person. The peak of the middle class in the United States was in the early 1980s. And ever since then, we've seen a steady erosion of income in the middle class, although the wealthy have been getting much wealthier. You want class warfare? Yes, it has been declared. And as Warren Buffett says, his class is winning. It's a Tom Hartman radio program, Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Senator John Kerry and rocker Bruce Springsteen told more than 80,000 people at their rally near Wisconsin's state capitol that working America is suffering under George W. Bush.
People have run out of their unemployment benefits. He says, no, we're not going to extend them. People are working for overtime, trying to get ahead. He says, no, we're going to cut overtime. Veterans are trying to get into VA. He says, no, we're not going to provide the money that the VA director wants. But he fights like hell to get that tax cut for the wealthiest people in America. We need a president who's not fighting for the drug companies and the oil companies and the power companies. We need a president who's fighting for you, for the middle class, for America.
Springsteen says he supports Kerry to uphold these values among others.
The human principles of economic justice, healing the sick, health care, feeding the hungry, housing the homeless, a living wage so folks don't have to break their backs and still not make ends meet.
Kerry says when he wins November 2nd, he'll attack the problem of exporting of American jobs.
When I'm president, we're going to shut the loophole that rewards the company that take jobs overseas, and we're going to reward the companies that create jobs and keep them here in the United States.
Kerry vows never to privatize Social Security and to lower the cost of health care for workers.
The world's second-largest tech service provider offshored more than 20,000 jobs to places like Mexico, India, and Hungary by the end of 2003. So it comes as no surprise to critics of offshoring that Electronic Data Services announced early this week that it's offering an early retirement plan to over 9,000 U.S. workers. More than 17,000 of the jobs offshored by EDS were in the customer service field. However, at the end of last year, the company sent nearly 2,400 jobs for software developers and engineers abroad. In its announcement, EDS says that the early retirements are part of a larger plan to reduce its U.S. workforce by up to 20,000 employees. Students in Peoria, Illinois are getting a first-hand lesson in organized labor. 125 clerical staff members formed picket lines outside of Peoria Public Schools yesterday. According to a representative for the Peoria Federation of Support Staff, the strike began because the school district has not negotiated in good faith. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey management, skimping to save a couple bucks on heating costs in the workplace could be causing your workers to make more errors. A new report from Cornell University reveals that when office temperature in a month-long study increased from 68 to 77 degrees, typing errors fell by 44% and output jumped by 150%. The study also finds that raising the temperature to a comfortable level saves an employer on average $2 per worker per hour. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We were given these ideas that there's weapons of mass destruction, but where are the weapons of mass destruction? They said they were so sure where they were, but where are they? When we were over there, we looked around. I was on an intelligence gathering team. We looked in scientific installations. We never found anything. And it was just a lie. And that wasn't a proper use of American troops. That wasn't a proper use of my life, or my friends' lives, or the Marines who I've seen die around me. It's not a proper use.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Am I the only one who wants to say to Donald Trump, please, Donnie, please take your orange-dyed, bad comb-over hairdo and your grotesquely inflated ego and go away? The Donald, as he likes to be known, is the self-promoting high society celebrity who vamps shamelessly as a hard-nosed CEO on the reality TV show called The Apprentice. He also has a book out called Trump, How to Get Rich. In both the show and the book, Donnie poses as a very rich, successful businessman. He is rich, but he didn't get there himself. Instead, he got rich the old-fashioned way. He inherited a New York City real estate fortune from his daddy. And as for being a business success, you might want to ask investors in his struggling casino empire about that. Trump Hotels and Casino Resorts is the one business venture that he launched on his own, his claim to corporate success. It's crumbling. Worse, it's about to crash. Only 2 weeks after signing a new contract with NBC to pose as a business mogul on The Apprentice for another season, his real-life corporation announced a quarterly loss of $49 million. Indeed, Trump Hotels has never been profitable in its decade-long history, and it is stuck so deeply in some $2 billion of debt that Trump's own auditors say there is substantial doubt about whether it can survive. Donnie says it's not his fault. This has nothing to do with me, he whined. Yoo-hoo, your Trumpness, you're the CEO and chairman of the board. Investors and analysts lay the blame squarely at the Donald's feet, accusing him of ineffective management, slipshod financial practices, and a lack of competitive business vision. From his own board members and creditors, the CEO is about to hear the trademark phrase he uses on his TV show, you're fired. This is Jim Hightower saying, it couldn't happen to a more deserving guy. What a fraud.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
Whoa!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, free money. Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get Score Power from Equifax.com. Score Power gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get Score Power at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on one of the web's very finest webcasting stations, radiopower.org, with archives at whiterosesociety.org, and also tomhartman.com. We have topical archives, but if you want to hear the whole show, go to whiterosesociety.org. You can find it all off our website, tomhartman.com. However you spell it, it'll get you there. And so we've got, boy, there's a lot in the news today, a lot of interesting things to talk about. Here's one in particular that I find fascinating. George Bush named Movie Villain of the Year. We should probably have our Halloween music for this.
Oh, yes, there we go.
Film fans have voted him Movie Villain of the Year. He competed with atomic scientist Dr. Octopus from Spider-Man 2. And the Texan Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But sure enough, movie viewers have decided that the movie villain of the year was George W. Bush. You say, well, what movie was he in? It was in Fahrenheit 9/11. Total Films editor Matt Mueller told Reuters, this is a Reuters story, the overwhelming response of our readers voting for Bush as the top villain just goes to show how frightening people found him in Fahrenheit 9/11. He was absolutely terrifying in that film. The infamous scene where he's informed about the Twin Towers attack while he's visiting a school and he sits there absolutely paralyzed. It's enough to strike fear into anyone's heart. Yeah, so, interesting. Salon.com doing a story. Now, the bulge on Bush's back. Have you been reading these things? This is just great. You know, for the last week now, Bush has had this voice in his ear talking to him. And, of course, in all three of the debates, you could see these things on his back. And, in fact, there was even a picture on White Bush wearing one of these things on his back. And they think that it's a receiver that then transmits to a thing that's stuck deep down inside your ear, a passive receiver. That requires a box on your back that can generate enough juice that you can hear this thing. And he was being coached during his debates. And, of course, which raises the question, who was the idiot that they had coaching him? But that's a whole other point. But anyhow, the Salon.com now has gone to NASA. And Dr. Robert Nelson, however, was not laughing. This, you know, on Good Morning America, they asked George Bush, what's that bulge on your back? And he said, I'm embarrassed to say it's a poorly tailored shirt. Robert Nelson, not laughing. He knew the president was not telling the truth, and Nelson is neither conspiracy theorist nor midnight blogger. He's a senior research scientist for NASA and for Caltech's Jet Propulsion Laboratory and an international authority in image analysis. For the past week, it just goes on. He says, this is consistent with the appearance of an electronic device, he says. It would certainly be consistent with some kind of a radio receiver and wire. Everyone wants to think my colleague and I are a bunch of dope-crazed, ravaged Democrats who are looking to insult the president, and that's not what this is, the same thing. So, yeah, what's going on? Well, it's kind of, frankly, I have to say, I think that's kind of trivial stuff. But, you know, it's these are also real issues that we have to face. Here, 2 weeks from Election Day, a double whammy of bad economic news. For the 9 months so far this year, real earnings in the United States have gone down five of those 9 months. They've increased three of the months, and this month they remain stagnant. That's a net loss of worker income for 2004. People who make a, who work to make a living are making less. Now, if you make your living sitting on your butt waiting for your dividend checks, you, of course, are making more because your maximum tax rate has been cut to 15% and you don't have to pay FICA. You don't have to pay payroll taxes. Real average weekly earnings, this from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, were unchanged from August to September after seasonal adjustment. A 0.2% increase in hourly average earnings was offset by a 0.2% rise in the consumer price index. And more bad news, the new construction of single-family homes fell 8.2% last month. So people say, I say this stuff and people say, oh, you're just being a partisan, you're ranting and raving, you're trying to, you know, make George Bush look bad, this all has to do with the election. No, the point that I'm making, and I would say it even, many of Bill Clinton's economic policies were conservative economic policies that I thought were destructive. His signing of NAFTA and GATT, for example. Bill Clinton did a lot of good things, but I've got a lot of problems with some of the other things that he did. So, you know, I'm an equal opportunity critic, as it were, to some extent, although I have to say that, by and large, the Democrats and Democratic Party are more interested in the in the health and welfare of people, and the Republicans and the conservatives are more interested in the health and welfare of property. And, you know, that's just a simple reality. It always has been. Well, not quite always. I mean, the Republican Party was founded, actually, as a reform party in 1857. But by 1872, the election when the progressives and the populists split off, that's, you know, when the corruption really began. But in any case, no, I'm not saying this is a partisan statement. What I'm saying is conservative economics don't work. It's just very simple. Conservative economics don't work. The supply-side failures of 1981 to 1988. We were promised by the Reagan folks the supply-side economics. They promised us this in the 80s, and they promised us this in the last 4 years. The same economic policy, you know, weird voodoo economics. They promised us faster growth, reduced deficits, higher savings, greater investment, and increased tax revenues. And what did we get? Well, just looking at Reagan's years, the average growth was 2.8% a year, but during the Truman, Kennedy, and Johnson years combined, the average growth rate was 5.4%, twice that, or nearly twice that. The myth that it would lead to reduced deficits. Well, in 1981, our deficit was $79 billion. That's 2.7% of gross domestic product. By 1988, it had risen to $167 billion, 4.4% of GDP. Our federal debt exploded. It went from $900 billion to over $2 trillion under Reagan. See, basically what these guys do is they say, we're going to show you good economic good times. Just go along with us. Borrow money from your children and let us spend it. We're going to borrow it in your name and we're going to spend it. We're going to call that a tax cut. And suddenly it's going to look like the economy got better. Well, I'm telling you, you give me a credit card that my children have to pay off, and it's got a $100,000 line of credit on it or a $1 million line of credit, I can show you what it looks like to live high. But it doesn't mean that I'm creating real wealth. And this is, you know, this conservative economics just plain old flat out don't work. Higher savings. Personal savings rates fell to 5.2% in 1988, a post-war record low. The lowest prior to that had been 1981, before Reagan came into power, or as he came into power, 9.1%. Investments will increase, they said. No, sorry. Investment as a share of GDP shrank during the 80s. Increased tax revenue. No, sorry. Tax revenues decreased also. That's why Ronald Reagan, in the last 6 years of his presidency, every single year had to raise taxes. Although, again, you don't hear the cons talking about that very much, do you? 15 minutes past the hour. Let's take a few phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Rick in California is on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mr. Hartman. Thank you for taking my call.
I'm pleased to have you on.
Listen, I don't know that I'm academically prepared to discuss the weightier philosophical issues with you this morning, but I do have a couple of practical issues regarding this campaign that I would like to get your take on.
Sure.
You seem like you're pretty adept. Number one, I come from a lifelong Republican family. There are 29 registered Republicans in my family, and we're spread out over at least a half a dozen different states, some of them battleground. At a recent family reunion this summer, it became apparent, as we started to discuss politics, it became apparent that almost every one of us were for the first time in our lives, going to break with our party and vote for the Democrat, Mr. Kerry. Mm-hmm. And the reason that kept coming up was that finally, the Democrats have given us a creditable alternative to the Republicans that we had voted for in the past. And yeah. Like you, a lot of us began our political careers and our political interest with the Goldwater campaign of 64.
Yeah, which mobilized a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people woke up because of Barry Goldwater.
Well, it certainly
he said a lot of things that needed to be said, frankly, in my opinion.
Well, we didn't think he was exactly the village idiot. We saw some...
No, in your heart, you knew he was right.
I
remember...
I know.
Yeah.
But here we are today,
yeah.
And to a person, all 29 of us are breaking with our party, and for very different reasons. Some of us are adamantly pro-choice. Some of us are in the military are not buying all the Bush rhetoric. Their major complaint is, of course, that Bush wraps himself in the American flag and then...
Rick, I have to say, you know, you're pointing out to me all the reasons why to vote against Bush, but I have to say, I started out a year ago saying that I would vote for anybody but Bush.
I was
an early supporter of Howard Dean. However, the more I've learned about John Kerry over the last few months, the more convinced I have become that he is the first candidate for the presidency of the United States since the 1930s who has the potential to be another Franklin Roosevelt or another Abraham Lincoln, a truly great president.
He may well be, Mr. Hartman, but none of that resonates with us.
Okay.
The issues for us vary, like I said.
Sure.
A couple of family members are gay, and this whole DOMA thing is driving them crazy. Some
yeah.
guys in our family are police officers, and the assault weapons ban is driving them crazy. There are teachers in our family that are terribly concerned about No Child Left Behind, which on the face of it looked okay, but now we find out that 3.1 million have been left behind.
No Child Left Behind was a welfare bill for the testing corporations.
As we have found out.
Here's my issue.
So, the reason that I am breaking with my party, and I have been saying this all along and nobody's been listening, but now all of a sudden with the Chief Justice Rehnquist health issue surfacing, my issue is and always has been the protection and the security of the Supreme Court. I have always felt that if you control the court, you control the country.
Yeah.
And with 35 years of progressive legislation and progress on the line, I am terrified that this idiot president is going to get his fingerprints on our Supreme Court.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
35 years of progress are going to go down the drain.
You know, I absolutely agree with you, Rick. And in fact, I want to take it a step beyond that and tell you, you know, Scalia was here, and thank you for the call. Scalia was here in Vermont a few weeks ago, and he said, "You want rights? Pass a law." That's a quote. You want right? He was talking about gay rights and abortion rights. He says, "You want rights? Pass a law." He and Thomas have this new view of the Constitution. In fact, they've come up with a new word for it, which is escaping me at the moment. And their view of the Constitution is that if a right is not laid out in the Constitution, it doesn't exist. And this gets back to that whole discussion that Madison and Jefferson were having back in 1787. And it is dangerous. It is absolutely dangerous. The worldview of Scalia and Thomas. In 1956, there was a case in Connecticut that involved birth control, and where a married couple was arrested for having condoms in their bedroom. It was illegal. And Justice, I believe it was Justice Potter at the time, said, "I can find no right to privacy in the Constitution." Clarence Thomas, in the Texas sodomy case, quoted him and said, "I can find no right to privacy in the Constitution. There is no right to privacy. But the Constitution says all the rights are ours." I mean, read the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. I agree with you, Rick. It makes me crazy, too. 20 minutes past the hour where a married couple was arrested for having condoms in their bedroom. It was illegal. And Justice, I believe it was Justice Potter at the time, said, "I can find no right to privacy in the Constitution." Clarence Thomas, in the Texas sodomy case, quoted him and said, "I can find no right to privacy in the Constitution. There is no right to privacy. But the Constitution says all the rights are ours." I mean, read the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. I agree with you, Rick. It makes me crazy, too. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service.
Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G.
Groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, then .com and learn how to get a free renow.com. Dennis Weaver now.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Forces of world unite, let us save the day.
One of my favorite songs.
Malcontents without 5 cents want us to cut our pay.
Forces of the world unite.
We only make 500 times as much as our average worker drones. We work just as hard, and we too sometimes need to paint our homes.
Oh, the poor bosses of the world.
The pressures are incredible, and no one seems to care. We moved our plants to Haiti, and now we have to move from there.
Welcome back to Bosses of the World United. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 25 minutes past the hour. Here's a point that, again, I think in part because of the failure of our educational system, people don't understand. Economists know this, but it's something that's broadly not known among the average American, and that is that a middle class is not a normal thing. Look back over 6,000 years of history. What nation had a middle class? It's not a normal thing. What is normal, if you have an absolutely unfettered, quote, free economy, what's normal is to have a very small class of very rich and powerful people and a very large class of very poor and terrified people. That's what's normal. And Jefferson and the founders said, no, we want to have a middle class. Jefferson referred to it as the yeomanry and the plowmanry. Let's have a middle class. And the middle class that was first made possible in the United States was made possible by free or cheap land. They, you know, the Indians died off in droves from diseases we brought from Europe, and those that didn't die off from the diseases, we killed. So we basically took their land. Okay, so there was free land. That created a middle class that lasted from the early 1700s all the way up until the time of the Civil War, when America started industrializing. As soon as America started industrializing, however, land wasn't free anymore, and the farmer class, the farmer middle class, the family farm, couldn't make it because the railroads made it possible for the then equivalents of ADM and Cargill to rise up and seize control of the distribution of agricultural products. It started wiping out farmers. So you saw the Grange movement erupt in the 1870s. One of the first progressive movements, the progressive movement, the populist movement in the 1880s, in response to this. And we went back from 1870 until 1930, we went back to a period that was like England in the Victorian era, Dickensian England. You know Charles Dickens, remember A Christmas Story? Bob Cratchit hoping that maybe Mr. Scrooge would give him the day off for Christmas, terrified of his job, no health care available, his son might die. That's normal, and in a quote laissez-faire economy, George Soros writes about this brilliantly in his book The Crisis of Global Capitalism, and so Franklin Roosevelt said, no, we think that we agree with the founders. We agree with the founders that a middle class is essential to democracy. It's a good and healthy thing. We're going to have a middle class. And so in 1935 they passed the Wagner Act, which allowed people to unionize. If capital can organize into the form of a corporation, if corporations can unionize into trade associations, chambers of commerce, lobbying groups, then labor should be able to organize and have equal power in the marketplace. And this was a battle that was fought for the better part of 50 or 60 years, and a lot of people died fighting this battle. And finally, in 1935, a law was passed that made it a right to unionize. And that was the beginning of the middle class in the United States. And so anyhow, it's a point that I think it's really important to make. Let's take a quick call here. We've got just about a minute left. Ron in Nebraska, I think, is on the line. Hey, Ron, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I guess my thought is that it seems to me the class warfare has been fought and, you know, the elite won. And how do you go about changing it now? It seems like the whole system
is rigged against us. The way that you go back, the way that you go about changing it is the same way that the suffrage movement worked. It's the same way the abolition movement worked. It's the same way the civil rights movement worked. It's the same way the anti-war movement worked. It is you wake up people. You start waking up people. More and more people are talking about these issues. More and more people are writing about these issues. The word is spreading. And as if we can rechange the paradigm, if we can accomplish what those cons did back in the 1970s with their right-wing think tanks, if we can start sharing these messages with people, we can bring back a middle class in America. I believe we can do it. I really do. 29 minutes past the hour.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Senator John Kerry and rocker Bruce Springsteen told more than 80,000 people at their rally near Wisconsin's state capitol that working America is suffering under George W. Bush.
People have run out of their unemployment benefits. He says, no, we're not going to extend them. People are working for overtime, trying to get ahead. He says, no, we're going to cut overtime. Veterans are trying to get into VA. He says, no, we're not going to provide the money that the VA director wants. But he fights like hell to get that tax cut for the wealthiest people in America. We need a president who's not fighting for the drug companies and the oil companies and the power companies. We need a president who's fighting for you, for the middle class, for America.
Springsteen says he supports Kerry to uphold these values, among others.
The human principles of economic justice, healing the sick, health care, feeding the hungry, housing the homeless, a living wage so folks don't have to break their backs and still not make ends meet.
Kerry says when he wins November 2nd, he'll attack the problem of exporting of American jobs.
When I'm president, we're going to shut the loophole that rewards the company that take jobs overseas, and we're going to reward the companies that create jobs and keep them here in the United States.
Kerry vows never to privatize Social Security and to lower the cost of health care for workers.
The world's second largest tech service provider offshored more than 20,000 jobs to places like Mexico, India, and Hungary by the end of 2003. So it comes as no surprise to critics of offshoring that Electronic Data Services announced early this week that it's offering an early retirement plan to over 9,000 U.S. workers. More than 17,000 of the jobs offshored by EDS were in the customer service field. However, at the end of last year, the company sent nearly 2,400 jobs for software developers and engineers abroad. In its announcement, EDS says that the early retirements are part of a larger plan to reduce its U.S. workforce by up to 20,000 employees. Students in Peoria, Illinois are getting a first-hand lesson in organized labor. 125 clerical staff members formed picket lines outside of Peoria Public Schools yesterday. According to a representative for the Peoria Federation of Support Staff, the strike began because the school district has not negotiated in good faith. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey management, skimping to save a couple bucks on heating costs in the workplace could be causing your workers to make more errors. A new report from Cornell University reveals that when office temperature in a month-long study increased from 68 to 77 degrees, typing errors fell by 44% and output jumped by 150%. The study also finds that raising the temperature to a comfortable level saves an employer on average $2 per worker per hour. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole. Yeah, from those nads in Tiananmen Square.
Yeah, the it.
It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly
the
real.
It in Leonard Cohen's song.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day.
What's coming?
Fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming.
I really believe it, friends. I really and truly believe it, that we can bring democracy back to the United States of America. That this, that the idea of democracy, the concept of democracy, is one that is so real, so powerful, so sacred, and so built into us. It is in our genes that it ultimately, it cannot be denied. By the way, I want to mention the Boss's song that I love so much. I you know, you get it. Here we are on C-SPAN. It's a whole different day. And I forgot to mention Jim Turr of BlueCanyonSatire.com, BlueCanyonProductions.com, one of the great creative geniuses of the United States, produced that, along with a number of other just wonderful satires that we regularly use in this program. And 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. I'm losing track of who's where here. I think this is Don in Santa Clara. Is that right? Is that is not Don in Santa Clara?
Yeah, hello.
Oh, it is. Hey, Don,
hey,
in Santa Clara.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Don.
I haven't talked to you in years.
Oh, that Don Arnoldy. Amazing. How are you?
I'm fine.
So what's up?
A couple of things. I've been listening. This is cool to see you on TV. First of all, I'm 90% certain the FCC is part of the Commerce Department.
Thank you. Which puts it under the in the cabinet under the executive.
Yes.
Okay.
The Constitution does in fact talk about privacy. Because right in the front it says life, liberty, and people who are under surveillance are not considered to be at liberty.
Yeah, absolutely. The Fourth Amendment talks about privacy. It's just that nobody in 1776 would have said out loud the word privacy unless they meant that they had to use the bathroom.
Now,
in fact, there weren't bathrooms back then. I mean,
you're right, it's outhouse.
They had to use the privy,
right?
Which was called privy because it was privacy.
The other thing, I have a very simple change to suggest. People who are not eligible to vote in an election have no right to participate in the process. That means that if you have a proposition in California about Indian gaming that executives from Reno who work for the casinos aren't allowed to contribute.
Oh, well, see, this is...
Corporations who can't vote can't give money.
That's right. I mean, this was Teddy Roosevelt's point in 1907 when these laws were passed, is that a corporation can't give birth, it doesn't die, it doesn't fear going to jail, it doesn't need fresh water to drink, it doesn't need fresh air to breathe. Why should we give it a voice in the decisions that we, the people, make about these issues in our lives?
But it also applies to foreign nationals giving money to campaigns. It applies to people from other states giving money.
And in the past, there have been laws against all of those things. And what we have seen is the rise of special interests in the United States that have just been chopping this thing away. And I think it's time to change it. Good point, Don. I appreciate the call, and I think you made an excellent point. 1-866-889-8894. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff, one of our regular callers. How you doing?
Pretty good.
If it's the same Jeff. Yes, it is. Yeah.
You're just talking about the inheritance tax. Well, Bush has replaced that with a birth tax where a brand new baby owes about
$25,000. $22,512 if you are born today, and that's just from the money that George Bush has run up.
Other thing about money is you're not just the politicians, but you see stations like CNN with all their ads for companies that we can't buy from. Who are they advertising to? Isn't that political money too?
Yeah, I have said that over and over again. When you watch TV and you see an ad for a military contractor talking about their new jet fighters, or a company that sells oil drilling equipment, why are they spending millions of dollars to reach consumers like you and I when I can't go down to my corner store and buy an oil rig? I can't go down to my corner store and buy a Boeing jet. And the reason, frankly, is very simple, Jeff. It's very straightforward. The reason why is because they're buying access to the media. They don't want to be criticized, in my opinion. They don't want to be criticized in the media. I saw this thing with starting out with public radio. I remember on public radio when the ADM scandal, remember when Archer's Daniel Midland was fined hundreds of millions of dollars. It was a big scandal. This was a decade ago or so, it seems. Within a few years, suddenly they're a big sponsor of public radio, and I haven't heard any criticism of big agricultural combines ever since then. I don't see that as a conspiracy. I see that as, adding two and two. 1-866-889-8894. Stephanie in Ohio is on the line. Hey, Stephanie, welcome to the program.
Hi. This is the first time I've ever even heard of you. I was just watching C-SPAN.
Well, welcome.
There's, I guess, a couple things that really scare me now, and you talking about democracy is the wanting to seem to suppress voting.
Yes.
I listened to a conservative radio station in Akron, and they talk about people too dumb to vote or they shouldn't be allowed to vote. And that's one of the things that fears me the most is losing the right to vote.
Let me just interrupt you, Stephanie. That's absolutely consistent with the conservative worldview that says that, I have to lay this quote on you. It's just so solid because it's assuming that I can easily. Well, maybe I can't quickly find it. I thought I had it right here. I don't. Anyhow, that's just absolutely consistent. Oh, here it is. Yeah. This is Edmund Burke. The occupation of a hairdresser or of a candle maker cannot be a matter of honor to any person, to say nothing of a number of other more servile employments. Such description of men not ought to suffer oppression from the state, but the state suffers oppression if such as they, either individually or collectively, are permitted to rule. In other words, people who are not of conservative elite class should not be allowed to vote. They're simply too stupid. And that's the argument that they're making, and it's anti-democratic. It is wrong. It is a crime against democracy to say such things. Pardon my interrupting you.
Oh, no problem. And there was another couple things. I don't know. I was watching C-SPAN one day when they were, going over that H.R. 576.
Yeah.
And one of the senators, I don't remember who it was, made a comment about China and Japan had loans to the United States of $1 trillion.
Yeah.
I guess that they owe. I mean, they hold government bonds or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They suggested that that was how they funded the tax relief.
Yeah. Here's the situation. Real quickly, Stephanie. But by the way, let me just finish up the point that I was making before. Because
okay.
The reason I read you that Edmund Burke quote is because Edmund Burke is the founder and the father of modern conservative thought. When that guy on the conservative talk show was doing that rant, he was simply being a conservative. I mean, that's all. It's wrong, but that's just conservative thought. But here's the situation. We are running not only huge debts, that is, we are borrowing money and in the name of our children and grandchildren in order to spend that money today to make the economy look good so that George Bush can get himself reelected or elected, let's say. I don't think he was elected the first time. We are borrowing on a credit card, but we are also running a trade deficit. Most people don't talk much about the trade deficit. The trade deficit this year is going to be over $500 billion, over $500 billion as well. Now, what that means is if we buy, say, $200 billion worth of stuff from China, more than we sell to China, China ends up with $200 billion of our money. What are they going to do with that money? Well, just by coincidence, we're out in the business of selling IOUs. We're in debt. We need to borrow some money from somebody because George Bush has had these huge tax cuts, as the Office of Management and Budget has said. You know, half of the total debt right now is a result of Bush's tax cuts. So we're in debt. We're borrowing in the name of our children. So we go to China and we say, China, you got a bunch of extra money because we bought all this stuff for Walmart, you know. We would like to borrow that money from you. So China loans us that money. In other words, they buy treasury bills and treasury bonds. Now we're in a situation. I don't know if you saw this in the newspaper, but last week Colin Powell went over to China and he said, here he is holding hands with a bloody, ruthless dictator in China, a man who has a regime that has murdered tens, if not hundreds of millions of its own people, that has murdered over a million people just in Tibet. He's holding hands with this guy, and he says, Taiwan has no right to independence. We agree that Taiwan is not an independent nation. Why is he saying that? Because he is scared to death. We have through the conservative economic policies that started with Reagan and continued through George Herbert Walker Bush, continued in large part through Bill Clinton, and certainly are even now steamrolling under George W. Bush, we have handed to China so much of our debt, they own so much of our debt, that if tomorrow morning the Chinese government were to go out into the international marketplace and do what George Soros did let's take George Soros out of this. If they were to go into the marketplace and just play the currency, just speculate in the currency, just say, okay, guys, we're willing to sell this debt, or we're willing to sell these dollars cheap, they could bring the United States to its knees in 24 hours. They wouldn't have to fire a shot.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder about that, why it seems like, you know, everybody keeps talking about Korea and the nuclear weapons. Are we really not, you know, going against that because we're afraid of China, would China support Korea, or...
That's,
you know,
right. No, the biggest threat to the United States right now is China. Actually, the biggest threat to the United States is conservative economic policies that have ceded our sovereignty, that have given our sovereignty to other nations. That we have gone from, during the administration of John Kennedy, being the largest debtor, the greatest debtor. In fact, during the administration of Jimmy Carter, being the largest creditor. Excuse me. More countries owed us money than any other country in the world. Right? We were loaning money to everybody else. By the time that Reagan was done with this, becoming the largest debtor in the world, and now it's to the point where economists are starting to get hysterical. It's really, really, really dangerous. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you, Stephanie. I appreciate it. Thanks for watching the show today. And you can listen to our web stream if we're not on a local station. And of course, if you want to get us on a local station, let them know about the Tom Hartman Radio Program available on the Jones Radio Network. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Let's go to Dick in Newcastle, Pennsylvania. Hey, Dick.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Okay, first time for me, too. I'm like Stephanie. I'm fortunate to be watching C-SPAN. Good to see in Pennsylvania, which is really a conservative state, a little breath of fresh air flowing in over the airwaves.
Thank you.
The thing I want to talk about, I like what you call the radical middle. I do some volunteer work and an alcohol rehab, and I work with families. And I happened to sit, and all of a sudden it hit me that I see family members come in, and they're struggling with the disease of addiction. And in many cases, in a mother, father dealing with a child, the mother sits there and says, this is my baby, I have to protect him, and the father is throw their butt out on the street.
Yeah.
Now, I explained to them just from my, Those are two viable options, but the good news is there's a whole bunch of options in the middle that can better work.
Sure.
Then I started thinking this a little bit further. I said, well, in reality, who should be closer than really working close together than environmentalists or hunters together? They should work together. The good
well,
news
and
is
they
in
are.
The middle.
They are. They absolutely are. In fact, there are a lot of hunters out there who are voting for John Kerry this year who are aggressively working for John Kerry. In fact, I saw a piece on one of the news shows last night. I think it was CBS Evening News. Because they're so concerned that Bush is destroying the wetlands and the pristine areas where you can go hunt.
Yeah.
So
and then
happening.
I have a friend who's a lieutenant colonel in the National Guard in South Carolina, and I happen to be a pacifist, and I said, you know, Eric, in reality, who should work closer together but members of the military and a pacifist group? Because in reality, I'm trying to save your butt, and you're trying to save my butt. And instead of taking these positions that were at opposite ends, we really need to work together. And that's what you, I think, seem to be carrying the message.
Well, to a large extent, Dick, and I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. You make good points. They're excellent points. Let's move along. Faith in Oklahoma is on the line. Hey, Faith, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, glad to be here. My name is Faith Dyson. I'm the cousin of Senator Roy Dyson in Maryland. I'm the representative for the American Family Rights Association, the Autism Autoimmunity Project, and the American... I'm sorry, I'm going to forget them all. I have to get them all. It feels like the Academy Awards.
Well, that's okay. What's your point, Faith?
You've been talking about why it is we, the people of the United States, do not stand up against all this tyranny. And one of the reasons is because our children are being taken away from us illegally by the governments, by the state governments. The reason I know this is because they have abducted my twin sons, who are high-functioning autistics. The state of Maryland has abducted them and kept them against their will for the last 4 years without stepping one foot into court. We have a little Gitmo going on about 70 miles southeast of Washington, D.C.
Faith, I have to say, I'm not unfamiliar with the situation you're talking about. In 1978, I was the executive director of a residential treatment facility for severely emotionally disturbed and abused kids who had been taken away from their parents by the state. I ran that program for 5 years. I'm still president of the board of directors, in fact, the New England Salem Children's Village in New Hampshire. And there is, in my opinion, a real serious issue of government power. Where do you draw the lines? I saw kids being taken away from their families in ways that I thought was inappropriate. On the other hand, there are, and we have to recognize this as a reality, there are parents out there who do horrible things to their children, who damage we had one kid come into our program whose brother had died of starvation. These two kids had been locked in a basement together, and the other one just barely made it, the one that came into our program. We had kids who came in who had broken bones. We had one kid whose mother had broken his fingers one at a time. Obviously, that's not your case. And these are issues that need to be raised. I think that they need to be raised, frankly, at the local level. And I encourage you to get out there and make as much noise as possible about it. These are absolutely real issues. 1-866-889-8894. Rod on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. Hey, Rod, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
We've only got about a minute left, Rod.
All right, real quick, could you give us your mailing address? I got your zip code, 65601. What's your box number?
Yeah, it's actually the zip code is 05601, and it's P.O. Box 247.
247.
It's on our website. If you go to tomhartman.com, you can find it on the website.
All right. Thank you much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Rod. Let's go to Eric in New Mexico. Eric, we've still got 30 seconds. What's up?
Hey, I was just wondering, because I was hearing you say, you kept throwing around the word democracy a lot.
Yeah. And you want to tell me that we live in a republic.
Right. Exactly.
I agree. And in fact, if you're watching on C-SPAN, I'll give you the rant that my listeners, regular listeners of this program, already know about the difference between a democracy and a republic, and why the cons have it wrong when they try and tell you, oh, it's not a democracy, it's a republic, and therefore don't listen to those nasty liberals. But thanks for raising the point. In fact, you just gave me a great one to step off on. I do appreciate it. It's 10 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. You're listening to the real free speech zone. No barbed wire here.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. so I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Global trade is rapidly expanding, and a lot of plants and animals are along for the ride. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The boom in global trade means more countries are sending and receiving more goods across national borders and across the oceans. Sometimes plants and animals ride along in the cargo and get dumped out in new environments. If they become established, they're transformed from mere stowaways into invasive organisms, and they can wreak havoc on native ecosystems. Chris Costello is a natural resources economist at the University of California at Santa Barbara. He says the spread of invasive species is tied to the steady increase in the amount of global trade and the number of trading partners.
As we trade with more and more partners, and as goods are traded from one place to another, and finally to their last destination, then the likelihood of picking up new species is dramatically increased.
Seeds, insects, and microorganisms are sometimes hidden in dry cargo, and all kinds of plants and animals travel in the ballast water of ships. Costello says a recent study found that the United States loses $100 billion per year to damage caused by invasive species or to money spent dealing with them. Costello says restrictions on trade are not necessarily the best approach to stopping these invasions.
You can't just think of blocking trade as having no cost, because it has a really important and potentially large economic cost.
Costello says a combination of approaches might be the best way to fight invasive species. He says measures might include more thorough inspection at ports, programs to monitor problem species, and restrictions on trade in special circumstances. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I see trees of green, red.
Ah, what a beautiful world, eh? Beautiful life. Isn't life a gift? Sometimes, like a beautiful day like this.
What a wonderful world.
On a beautiful day like this here in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, I am just amazed by the gift of life. I think of all the people in the graveyard down the street what would they give for just 1 minute to breathe this air, to hear the sound, And similarly, I think that we have been given an extraordinary gift, this gift of democracy in this nation. People fought and died for that gift. They gave their blood for that gift, and they continue to. They continue to this day. And we have an obligation to participate in promoting that gift as well, and that is to participate in the democratic process. And, of course, in my opinion, that means voting for John Kerry. I think he's the guy. And voting, and frankly, I live in Vermont, so I didn't vote a straight Democratic ticket because Bernie Sanders is an independent, and I wanted to vote for him. But if I live pretty much anywhere else, I think I'd vote a straight ticket because I am so disturbed by how the Republican Party has been completely taken over by the corporatists, by the, as we talked about in the second hour of the program, the fascists, to just use that word. Mark in Maryland's on the line. Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. What's up?
Well, I'm a software entrepreneur, and I'd love to hear some intelligent discussion from you about how that 90% tax bracket would work. I'm working my behind off developing some systems engineering software for the environmental and social justice movements.
Yeah.
To be in the defense industry.
Well, Mark, I don't think you should pay a 90% tax bracket. I think it should be the same way it was under Roosevelt, until you're making around $90 to $100 million a year. It was the equivalent of that back then. If you're making $100 million a year, on the first $10 million, $20 million, $30, $40 million, you're paying 20, 30, 40, 50% income tax. When you get over $100 million a year, I have no problem with the government saying, you've taken tremendous blessings out of this country. You've had tremendous success. 90% of it can go back to so that other people can do the same. What's
now,
wrong with
that? Is
that
on the amount above?
That's right. That's right. That's right.
30, 40.
Yeah.
I hope I'm blessed with that kind of success. But
yeah,
it's
on the amount above it, and that's how it worked before. It's on the amount above it. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate your show. Just learned about it on C-SPAN, so you've picked up a listener. I'm also going to look
great
at your Jefferson book. I'm a big fan of Jefferson, having grown up in Virginia.
Me too.
Bless
me too.
You, and Kerry will carry the day.
There you go. Mark, thanks for the call. Thanks to Ira for engineering our program today. Thanks to Louise for producing it. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org. Thanks to the folks at C-SPAN for showing up. Do appreciate it. Chris and Greg, Mark, Mike, there you go. Do appreciate it. Thanks to the callers. See you next Monday.
To the Tom Hartman program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.